right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again for the first time in, I think it's fair to say, a little while in the Genius Zone. Dom, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's really nice to be back in here talking about The Genius, which I guess we really could have done at any point in the, the last 5 years since the finale aired, because that's the anniversary that we're marking here. This is, as we're recording this, September the 12th, and maybe as you're listening to this even, September the 12th, the fifth anniversary of The Genius grand final finale, airing, I guess not on our screens, but us, like, downloading it illicitly and then hoping to avoid spoilers at all costs by not going on Twitter, which is, agonizing as that sounds, is worth it for that experience. But yeah, 5 years since then, and we did some postseason stuff. Obviously, we were covering that season week by week, and we gave our thoughts on the season as a whole afterwards. And at the time, though, there have been some interviews that have been done, not by us, sadly, but by others, after the fact, and then some other information has trickled out. And then, in general, just being so distant from it now, it's given us the time to kind of digest it and put it in the right perspective, and all the other happenings in the reality TV universe that we and our listeners inhabit can provide some kind of additional context for that too.
I was wondering, I was trying to think about, I guess, earlier, when the last time we even talked about The Genius was. We were covering season four on a weekly basis as it aired in real time 5 years ago. And I think we actually didn't even finish our Genius 3 coverage until after that. So the Genius 3 might have been the more recent week-by-week coverage. I know we've done a couple of one-off episodes, but as far as I remember, I think the last time we may have been in here for a Genius podcast might have been 3 years ago for the two-year anniversary of ID Exchange, when we had Mike Bloom come in to talk through that. But that's the most recent one I can remember.
I do vaguely remember that. That was when I was still firmly ensconced in the UK, I believe. So a lot has changed since then. And we have peppered in a few urging people to watch The Genius every now and then, because why wouldn't we? Although, as you say every time you do it, at this point, if you haven't watched, what is one more reminder going to do for you? But yeah, we haven't sat down explicitly to talk about The Genius in so long now, so it's nice to be back in here doing that.
I mean, I'm hopeful that some people during quarantine, you know, at the time of this recording, it has been a tumultuous last several months, not just here in America or in Canada where Dom now is, but just all over the world. I do wonder if some people may have had a bit more time on their hands at home, and hopefully some of them finally felt compelled to watch The Genius. But yeah, if you have not watched The Genius, let me lay out what we are here to do today. We have both recently rewatched the entirety of The Genius 4, the All-Star season, the last season that it seems like there's ever going to be of The Genius. And today we're going to come back in and talk through just what that rewatch was like 5 years later. As I mentioned, if you would like some more in-depth analysis of like the games and strategy and so forth, we did that 5 years ago. And I do not think that it would be a prudent use of our time or really anyone else's to really dig too deep back into all of that again. But we will certainly be talking about many things that are specific along the way, and we will be getting into spoilers. So if you have not seen The Genius still, do not go much further into this. I'm going to put it right now. Don't go further than right now if you have not seen the entirety of The Genius. And I know, I'm positive, there are so many times where we're talking about things that people haven't seen and we give the spoiler alert and people listen along and they continue listening anyway. And on one hand, that is kind of flattering that people would, you know, listen to us talk about something that they haven't even seen. In this case, I would say I have never meant it more than I do in this moment. Please hear me. Do not continue with this podcast until you have seen all of The Genius.
Yeah, don't spoil yourself on the first three seasons of Fantastic Television by just watching a clip of The Genius 4 in the first place. And then also don't spoil the season 4 either. Just divest yourself from that altogether. I guess, like, if you're listening to this in the first place, I hope you've seen seasons 1 through 3. Otherwise, why are you here? How did you end up here? I good to have you with us, but don't be with us for much longer because, as you say, we are going to be fully in the spoiler zone for all of this. And I don't know what the official expiration date or lifetime of a spoiler warning is, but whatever. We're not here to identify that boundary. All we're saying is we will be giving spoilers for the season, so bear that in mind as you move ahead.
Yes, and you may be wondering, how do I get caught up on The Genius if I would like to do so? My pinned tweet on Twitter, at Colin Stone, has a link to I think it currently links to like a Reddit thread where they then link to the places that you can download all four seasons. I don't know what the status is at this moment on what is like streamable, but it is definitely available if you are willing to download the actual files, which I would I cannot more highly recommend making that decision with your life. If you've ever heard Dom and I talk about The Genius before, which I would imagine is pretty likely if you are a regular listener, this is, as far as I would be concerned, the reality TV franchise that I would be most enthusiastic to put my meaningless endorsement on.
Absolutely. And we'll get into this, I'm sure, and I'm curious to see exactly what you think about it. But I would say 5 years on, most of it has aged pretty well, all things considered.
Yes, and we will definitely get to that shortly, Dom. One other thing, though, very quickly, before we get into specifics, and this isn't quite spoiler zone, but we're getting there, non-spoiled people, so be ready. You're already pushing it. One thing I really wanted to say at the start of the podcast, we've certainly said it before, but it has just been so long, and I know there are just a meaningful enough number of people, at least, who have gotten into The Genius, that I do think it is something worth repeating, which is none of this would have been possible without the astounding efforts of some mystery person whose identity is completely unknown, that just goes by Bumdiddlyumptious. I really want to go out of my way at the very beginning. I'm sorry, I sound like Jin-ho with my stuttering all over the place this episode. At the very beginning of this podcast, I really want to reiterate for the first time in far too long how grateful I am to this person. And just because when you think about it from their perspective, like, the average human would say, okay, I love this TV show, this is awesome, I'm going to enjoy it. An outgoing person may say, I'm going to tell all my friends about it and really insist that they watch it. And I think that's roughly where you and I are, Dom, on this tier. This is a person who said, encouraging my friends and just people who have this TV channel is not enough. I'm going to subtitle this entire franchise into English so the whole world can see the magic in this thing that I have enjoyed so much myself, and I feel that so hard. So big time shout out to Bumdiddlyumptious.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I relate to it because I cannot imagine going through that amount of legwork myself. Also cannot relate to what may be even more impressive in their response to it, which is there is so much clout and frankly money and other resources they could have amassed just by making themselves known and accepting the tokens of life, tokens of gratitude that people would thrust upon them, and yet they're trying to forego all of that, which again could never be me, but I respect that decision.
I think it is so fitting that Bumdiddlyumptious is a play on at least a Willy Wonka reference, because it really is that kind of mystique within The Genius. It's like the Wonka factory, but still at the part where it's been closed for a couple of decades and we have no shot of ever knowing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so Dom, I think with that out of the way, let's get into the spoiler zone. Now would be the time. If you are a real risk taker, rule breaker, this is the cutoff even for you. Get out of here. You do not want to know what is to come in this podcast until you have actually seen it play out yourself. I promise you. So you have been warned, and hopefully you are out of here by now. Dom, let us dive into the 5-year rewatch of The Genius 4, and now that we are in the spoiler zone, I'm sure you notice this, and anyone who rewatches this season now, knowing how it's going to ultimately play out, will immediately find this hilarious as well. the very, very beginning of season 4, episode 1 is all about the Bandage Man talking about how victory cannot be achieved in the same way. We get an Art of War quote pops up on the screen about how, yes, your guy, Dom Sun Tzu, about do not repeat the tactics which gained you one victory, but let your methods be regulated by the infinite variety of circumstances. The preseason tagline on all of the posters, by the way, was you cannot win again in the same way. And of course, Dongmin is going to go on to do almost exactly what he did in season 3.
If you want any further proof that the Art of War is complete bullshit, there you have it. What more do you want from me?
Yeah, I thought this was incredibly funny. Certainly, I've rewatched this season before and it stood out then, but such a funny note to get us off on here, well, phrasing, to start this season. I think is a great illustration of one of the things that I really enjoy the most about the Genius, which is their inability to learn how the season is going to play out and then retcon everything for the presentation of it after they know the final result, the same way Survivor does. And Big Brother is another show that they don't have that same luxury as Survivor does. They have to be a bit more honest along the way because they don't know who the eventual winner is going to be, and they don't know who's going to go on to humiliate themselves or whatever. And it's just amazing, like, to think about the sheer volume of retconning that would have gone on into editing any mention of this sort of thing out of the season if they had known Dongmin was going to go on to win.
Yeah, so the Genius straddles a line in terms of timing between Survivor and Big Brother, where there is like a 5 or 6 week period where once we get to the games that are, let's say, like episode 7, episode 8, the season has started airing at that point. So first of all, there's not too much turnaround time for them to actually get the show edited and put together. And despite that, they still do a fantastic job making it look pretty seamless, as far as I can tell. But then also, I wonder if you took a... if you zoomed out far enough and you took the big picture view, if you would be able to identify, okay, this is the point where we knew the outcome for this thing going ahead, and so now that's when we start to look back and you see signs of it in the episode.
Yeah, I was honestly trying to consider that sort of thing as we went along, and as I went along, I guess, on this rewatch, and I didn't feel like I could pinpoint an exact spot where it seemed like they were changing really their treatment of Dongmin in particular. It did feel like Kyunghoon started getting some different treatment along the way as things pertain to, actually, this guy may have some good ideas from time to time. And I also thought at a certain point, we probably would have seen more of Hyunmin if he were to be the eventual winner.
Yeah, Hyunmin, despite being an added participant in many of the games, is curiously, like, not really the main star in the same way anymore. And there are games like Fishhawk where he is the main star for all the wrong reasons. But outside of that, he is the workhorse behind a lot of the joint wins and the big blindsides that we see over the course of the season. And yet that role kind of goes understated. And Hyunmin actually did a really extensive Twitch stream going over a series of streams going over season 3, season 4. And someone, I don't think it's the same person, but someone did go through the effort of transcribing them. So very thankful to whoever that person was. And we're missing the end of season 4, which in many ways is the most interesting part. So that's unfortunate. But some interesting details in there just on what his thought process was, things we saw, things we didn't see over the course of the season. So we'll link that in the show notes for you. But that is one thing that he brought up as, you know, he said that he, for the most part, enjoyed season 4 less for many reasons. And one of those reasons was it felt like a lot of the moments he personally was proudest of over the season were not really framed in the same way, or it wasn't made about him. And the one time the focus was on him, again, is Fishhawk, where it's him getting cocky and overconfident and then having the rug swept out from underneath him.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see the footage of that Twitch stream, or did you just read the transcription?
I just read the transcription. So again, there's a game of telephone going on here where whoever transcribed this and translated it was self-aware enough to say, look, I'm doing my best effort here. There's going to be stuff which either doesn't render well in English, regardless, or, you know, my language facility is not perfect for both of these languages. So some stuff may be getting lost in translation, but they usually take care to note when they think that's happening.
So I did watch this Twitch stream years ago, back when it first happened, and Bumdiddlyumptious, I believe, transcribed it themselves originally, and I saw the thing you linked to, and it seemed like someone else had done that one, and Craig, you know, job well done by them as well. It was certainly extremely thorough, and there were virtually zero spots where I felt like much was being lost in translation then. But I only bring it up, and I'm sorry for taking more time than is maybe necessary when we have quite a bit to be getting here to today. But if you can still locate the actual video footage of that Twitch stream, I would say it is worth checking out, if only for Hyunmin's outfit as he is answering all of those viewer questions. He is wearing... it almost seems like a Big Brother punishment costume. It's like a custom sweatshirt that is, when he has the hood up, makes him look like it was either like a squirrel or a bear or a fox or something. He looked obviously adorable in it, but it was unlike much you would see on American Twitch streamers.
Yeah, strong chipmunk vibes from Hyunmin there. But maybe you would get the same vibe depending on which corners of Twitch you venture into, Colin. You got to open your mind a little.
Oh, let me also say, and we try to flag this up on as many of the Genius podcasts as we can remember as well, but since it's been a little while, I am generally a big advocate of trying to pronounce people's names correctly, if at all possible for me. This is a situation where I am... very sorry, but I have to just kind of phone it in with the anglicized, bastardized version of what this looks like. I can't come close, I'm sure, to the South Korean pronunciations. And I'm also sorry if I say anything that is, like, offensive in Korean culture.
Just a good blanket disclaimer there.
Yeah.
Just clip that, use that whenever we need to. It really tilts me in general when... Twitch streamers or sportscasters or anyone in that kind of realm, but when they encounter some non-anglicized name, they just make this big show out of not being able to pronounce it and of fumbling it. It's like, is that Hyunmin? It's like, just make your best effort, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but just be humble about it and move on. You don't need to make a big performance piece out of you not knowing how to do something.
Yes.
I will give the same disclaimer, first of all, just to cover my own ass, and then also, I have even more natural struggles than you do, Colin, in correctly pronouncing these names, so I would love to say that I'm pronouncing them correctly, but I'm taking the L on this one in advance. I have been doing this for 5 years now, so I accept that I'm going to get some of this wrong. With that in mind, let's dive into the season.
One thing I do wonder, we're certainly not the only people to have covered The Genius in podcast form in English, but you, Dom, might be the literal only person in the world with a British accent who has covered The Genius in podcast form.
Yeah. The only person who is English to have covered it in podcast form. Maybe Redmond at some point. That would not surprise me. And I know that Bothers Bar, I think it was. Like, back in the day, I'm going to say now, which making me feel old. But all those years ago, when various corners of the internet were coming together over their Genius fandom, over this thing that so few of us in the Western world knew about. I'm sure there were various of my fellow countrymen among those, but what I've always wondered with shows like this, when we are outsiders getting this glimpse into a different culture, I wonder what the podcasts, or I don't even know if they would frame it as a podcast. I'm not sure that's a concept which carries over well to South Korea. But I don't know what kind of media discussion there was about The Genius in Korean, like, which you'd expect there to be a lot because the show had great ratings and there are a lot of diehard fans of it. But I don't know exactly what form that would take.
Yeah, is there like a Survivor Sucks or an r/The Genius for Korean people?
There are definitely message boards where I'm told the fans are no less forceful than they are in the Big Brother Twitter sphere and so on. And that's actually one reason that Hyunmin gave for why the producers, the PDs, were reluctant to bring the show back for a fifth season, is that they saw what the level of discourse about the show was like, and they just, it was exhausting. They didn't want to go through that again themselves and also subject the contestants to that, especially given that these are, in many cases, celebrities, public figures who are going to be even more in the spotlight than just you know, some random you find in a bar if you're Lynn Spillman in California.
Yeah, I mean, Hyunmin mentioned in the beginning of that, sorry, but he said he was almost nervous about going back on for a second season just because it seemed like every contestant was either so beloved or so despised that he didn't want to risk being on the wrong side of that if he went back.
And he really bore the brunt of that, too, because he would do things which, not even he would make off-color comments or he would say or do things which required that additional context, but just playing the game in any kind of overtly cutthroat fashion, which he wasn't even doing most of the time, but Hyunmin attempting to play the game in the sense of that phrase that we would use, just out of hand, you know, without thinking about it, for a US reality TV show, that got him roasted constantly, dragged over the coals by the internet denizens, fanizens, whatever the official term is. So he did not enjoy that at all. And obviously, there are some colorful characters on the show itself, like Dongmin has been in the public eye for better or often for worse for things that he has said and done. But he, as a professional comedian and a shock jock, that is what you sign up for, right? That is part of the job description. Whereas for Hyunmin, who is just this this whiz kid who suddenly finds himself thrust into the spotlight, that was tougher to acclimatize himself to. And I know that since then he's done various broadcasts, because as we saw, Sangmin was teaching him all about them, Colin. Yeah, he's been in the public eye since then, but at the time, when this was all relatively fresh, then, yeah, just getting that sudden barrage of white noise is tough to deal with.
And I feel like I cut you off from saying something about Lynn Spillman.
No, I was joking that, you know, Lynn Spillman going into a bar to find people to cast for Survivor or Big Brother, that's really not how it works with a show like The Genius.
Yeah.
So you have a bunch of known figures already, and then especially in season three, the newbies who make it in, they have been heavily vetted in some extensive application process with a lot of competition. So you know that in theory you're getting the cream of the crop there.
Yeah, it seems like far more of a parallel with like the Jeopardy testing process than the Big Brother casting process.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. So Dom, let's get into it here. Season four. Episode one, obviously back in, I think it would have been July of 2015, our anticipation was through the roof, and I still remember just clicking play on the first episode, and every time I do it on season four, episode one, I have like a flashback to that moment, specifically when, after the Bandage Man has done his whole introduction speech, the door opens, Extreme Ways drops, and Jinho pokes his head through the door. That moment to me is like the choppers coming in over the horizon on Heroes versus Villains, where every single time I watch it, I get so amped.
That is the perfect parallel, and I was hoping we would kind of get a similar vibe from the opening minutes of Winners of War, and it was pretty good, I will say, but didn't quite match up to that level. But what that means is The Genius season four, those opening moments, that stands out to me still after 5 years as the best live viewing experience for me. Like that's when I was the most giddy to just press play on an episode and sit down and focus on nothing else for the next 90 minutes, which if you know me is very difficult for me. So I, you know, the fact that I was fully attentive is a statement in itself.
I mean, I remember they used to come out, I think often on like Tuesday afternoons or something, and we would sit there waiting for an episode to drop and then like time it so we could press play at the same time and
yes,
watch it.
Yeah. It'd be like not live reading, but just talking about it together as we got to a certain moment.
Yeah.
And then and sometimes the episode would be delayed by a day and that would just like ruin the whole week, you know. That would force you to restructure all of your commitments and everything. Like it was absurd. And you mentioned this at the time, the level of just control over our excitement, our schedules and so on, that whoever was translating this had in real time.
I mean, it's wild to think about. Like, I know on Wednesday nights, for instance, I'm generally going to be home watching Survivor and I can plan around that. But as season four was airing for us American viewers almost at random times, it was kind of weird just being fully a slave to whenever this episode was going to drop. Like, I'm going to drop whatever I have going on to make time to watch this. But yeah, so that is a really fun start every time as the players come in one by one. It's still surreal to me how amazing just this cast is overall, to see virtually every single legendary kind of player from the first seasons. There were certainly some snubs, and we've talked plenty about that in previous podcasts, but on the whole, it is just astounding the star power that they managed to get for this premiere. Some other highlights for me that really stood out during this kind of intro segment was another thing that I feel like kind of goes underreported as far as the Western viewers of the Genius are aware. They certainly know that Yoan is this legendary StarCraft player. I don't think it really sinks in, and I certainly don't know virtually anything about StarCraft either, but as far as I am aware, like, StarCraft in South Korea is a much, much bigger deal than even, like, poker is in America. Like, Yoan is much more recognizable in South Korea than any poker player probably is in America here. And, like, Hyunmin is blown away to see his, like, hero Yoan come through the doors, even seeing Yoan go the entirety of his first Genius season, getting essentially zero garnets the entire way there. Now, Yoan is very quick to lose pretty much 100% of this respect from Hyunmin once he actually sees him playing main matches firsthand here. But Yoan is someone that I feel like understandably takes a lot of heat for his performance on The Genius. I really do think it is worth noting what an absolute beast this guy is in his actual field of work.
Yeah, and seeing Jinho there is cool too, I guess. You know, no one remembers second place, as we're reminded often. But it is so funny, that contrast between Yoan being, at one point, the best in the world at something, just this titan of his craft, and then being so hapless when it comes to literally everything else, even the stuff that he should be good at. Like, okay, he's reinvented himself as a very successful online poker player. Okay, that's all well and good. But when it comes to every facet, basically, of playing The Genius, it just doesn't come together for some reason. And his manner really allows you to enjoy that, too. Because if he was someone who, like, was not self-aware about his own faults, if he couldn't be, like, if he was getting angry at the fact that he was losing, or if he was difficult to root for because of that, then that would be one thing. But instead, you kind of empathize with Yoan as he's, like, coming to terms with just how washed up he is at basically everything that he puts his hand to.
Yeah, I would imagine that being flustered in a random main match on The Genius is an emotional 2 out of 10 for Yoan compared to being, like, behind in some big StarCraft match. I would imagine he was one of the better prepared people to handle the kind of emotional highs and lows of The Genius. But it is just hysterical to think about, just, like, with that in mind, just I say this trying to give credit as far as, like, this guy is legit, like, the Michael Jordan of StarCraft. He's going to be famous for his entire life for his accomplishments in that field. And it is like, sorry to go back to poker again, but, like, to think about how bad he must be at these main matches for Hyunmin to just, like, go from idolizing him to immediately wanting nothing to do with him. It's genuinely, like, Dom, if we were on The Genius and we were just outright ignoring, like, Phil Galfond, like, actively trying to not let him talk to us because he's so bad at the main games.
It's absolutely wild. And they say never meet your heroes, and maybe this is a reason why.
Yeah. All right. So that was my big takeaway from the intros, is LOL at people still having respect for Yoan in this Genius house. But let's get into our first main match here, Dom. ID Exchange. As mentioned earlier, we've done a couple of podcasts about just this main match before, so we don't, I don't think, need to get too much into the nitty-gritty of the strategy or whatever. And incidentally, if you would like to find our full catalog of all of our Genius coverage from years past, the easiest way is probably just Google Dom and Colin Genius Master List. The post is called something like that. It definitely includes all of those words. You will find it if you just Google that, and that will have direct links for all of the podcasts we've ever done, I believe, about the genius, and you will find quite a few about ID exchange in there. And Dom, one recurring theme, at least for me, is that ID exchange is for sure in the mix as my favorite main match of all time. How did ID exchange hold up for you on a rewatch here?
It's very high up and would be high across all four seasons, I think. And it is not just that, but it's the perfect way to open the season, right? Because there are some all-time fantastic money matches, fantastic main matches over the course of the season. And there are a few duds or a few ones that are a bit slower. So if we started off the season with Horror Race, for instance, right? Or Seed Poker, like I don't know if it would get off to quite the same start, and the momentum just wouldn't be there. But when we start the season with Idea Exchange, it's like, okay, this is really setting the bar high for the season and showing me exactly what the show is capable of doing. And in case you needed a reminder at that point.
It's incredible, and this is really something I think that speaks to just how great the genius is and how many different people I think have been able to enjoy it, like how many different things it offers to all different kinds of people who are into this sort of thing. I would probably say that ID Exchange is my favorite, at least of the four season premieres, but I'm guessing you could find other people out there who would say that ID Exchange is the weakest of the four season premieres. The premieres are always so, so good. If we think back to the 1-2-3 game of, and of course the Garnet Heist in the Genius 1 episode 1, everything that went on with Hui Zhang and all of those ups and downs in Food Chain in season 2. And then one of my personal favorites, Fruit Stand in season 3, where Kyung Hoon just sells out the whole group. The season premieres in The Genius across the board, I think, are insanely effective at hooking people in.
Yeah, they've been fantastic. And I have not gone back to listen to what you and I said in real time as we were covering the season and we just seen that premiere and we were still giddy and wanted to jump right in and talk about it. And I imagine my memories of what I thought back then may be hazy, and I may say stuff now that contradicts what I said back then. But either way, to me, it still stands out. It still holds up very well. I look back on that episode very fondly, to the point where I was happy to come back in and talk about it again with you and Mike Bloom just 2 short years ago now.
I think I think it was the 2-year anniversary, which we put it at 3 years ago.
Okay. Did we just skip over the 1-year anniversary for some reason?
Yeah, probably. I think we probably intended for it to be the 1-year anniversary and just kept putting it off.
That would be very on brand, yeah. But I guess we just wanted any excuse to come back in and talk about the genius again. And frankly, I'm surprised it took us that long in quarantine. You'd think we'd be fiending for just stuff to talk about.
That is a fair point. But I did want to get to the kind of obviously big reveal here in ID Exchange is at the very end. Sangmin is essentially going to just sell out the entire group. Stop me if you've heard this before, Dom. Sangmin is going to take the convict card from Kyung-hoon, seemingly because he just feels bad for him, because he kind of shafted him with it in the first place. And, it didn't make a ton of sense to me in the moment why he would do this. I still don't think it makes a ton of sense. But one angle that I feel like maybe we touched on as we were covering this in real time, but it didn't really stand out, or maybe it stood out to me all over again, I guess, but it really stood out to me this time, is what a big impact this one decision I feel like is going to have on how the entire rest of the season plays out. I think if Sangmin just doesn't end up deciding to make the big flashy move, like for instance, maybe if this is just anything other than the premiere, Sangmin doesn't feel compelled to try to have some big drama bomb for the 75 minute mark of the TV episode, and he plays it a bit more straightforward. But I think when he does go to bat this hard for Kyung-hoon, it compels Kyung-hoon, who we know because of his Genius 3 episode 1 betrayal, where he talked openly about, like, I just wanted to do whatever Sangmin would have done. I wanted to be the Sangmin of the Genius 3. That guy's my hero. I do wonder if, you know, once Sangmin has made it clear to Kyung-hoon, I care about you, I want you to stay around, for the next couple of weeks, Kyung-hoon is, as he puts it, just Sangmin's dog at his heel constantly doing whatever Sangmin wants him to do. And that ends up being a massively bad thing for both of them, to such an extent that when Sangmin finds himself choosing a deathmatch opponent in episode three, and Kyung-hoon's been the only person who wasn't actively freezing him out the entire time, he still picks Kyung-hoon. And I think it's potentially because he recognizes the guy is too invested in me now. Like, having him around when he's trying to help is doing way more harm than good.
Now, I would definitely be like a stage 5 clinger for Sangmin if I had the opportunity. But yeah, it's more work than Sangmin can really bear at that point. And I think if you want to divide the season into two eras, so to speak, or two halves, it would be, I would say Fishop after Sangmin gets eliminated. That gives us hope that the season can continue at this, the pace that it's been going on so far. But I think after Fishop, the season does slow down somewhat. And at that point, it's a good season with a lot of good characters, interesting stuff going on, but it's not like the great season that it was for those first three episodes and for episode one and episode three in particular. So I think losing Sangmin did a lot to kind of reduce the ceiling for what the season could have been. And especially because there was a reading of the Genius Grand Final where it's basically, okay, there is a majority alliance and that alliance just sticks together, it has the best players in it, and everyone just listens to Dongmin, even when it seems like they shouldn't be listening to Dongmin, or there would be a great opportunity to break away from Dongmin. Dongmin just issues marching orders, and people do that, and we get this amazing six-way joint victory in Garnet High, sort of five-way, or we get all of these other big wins for the majority, and it feels like there's not too much hope of really overturning that. And stop me a few feathers before, it sounds very reminiscent of the criticisms that people make about modern day Big Brother, especially the most modern day Big Brother in BB22 that we're seeing unfold now, where if it is just all the suspense is taken out because the big alliance wins power and they never lose it and they just ride it all the way to the finish line, you can respect the technical craft of that game, but you need the possibility that something else could happen to keep it interesting. And the format of the Genius means that is always in play, and that's one of the strengths of the setup that they have. But I think losing Sangmin, who was often a big part of the majority, but always a center of attention, and the person who had that destructive charisma, the way Dongmin did, where even after all the ridiculous nonsense he did, people still wanted to go back to him and include him in their plans and go out of their way to try and save him. And so I think losing Sangmin where we did, we got Kyung-hoon, who tried to calm down a bit after Sangmin was gone to questionable success, but it really no substitute for the real thing. And you know, I think losing Sangmin is one of the turning points in the season for sure.
Oh, totally. And I hadn't thought about it like that before, but I think that is a good point, that there is, even though it's 3 episodes versus 9 episodes, potentially a clear division between the Sangmin era and the post-Sangmin era. And at least for me, like you said, Fish Shop is one of my all-time favorites. We'll certainly talk a bit more about that a little later. I love the 5-way joint win in Garnet Thief, and I'm just always going to be a sucker for Minus Auction as a game. But I don't disagree with your overall take. I think that despite this being hands down the best cast as far as I'm concerned and the most competitive overall, the first time I was watching it, I was totally riveted, could not wait to see which of these titans would be eliminated next and how all of these battles would play out and who would ultimately win. But despite feeling like the Genius 4 may still be my favorite overall Genius season, just because there are so many highs, and granted, sure, most of them are early on. On a rewatch, once I know how everything's going to go, I think at least a case could be made that this might be the least interesting season, or at least have the most number of episodes that are not as interesting.
Yeah, the narrative of the season may be uninteresting from one standpoint, but you still have the best cast of characters, I would say. And then also some of the big picture storylines of Kyung-hoon going from this joke, someone who you don't understand how he even made it into the cast, to being the Kingslayer, to winning all these death matches, to coming this close to winning the entire season for himself. We were saying going into the final three of that season that any of the options would have been such great ways to conclude the season and potentially conclude the Genius, where either you have Dongmin as the two-time winner and the unquestioned titan of the show. You have Heung-min, who, after suffering that agonizing loss in the finals, comes back, makes it all the way to the end again, and does it one better, and finally clinches that title that could have been his, should have been his last time. Or Kyung-hoon, who is the ultimate wild card, the ultimate variable, who, you know, him winning the season would in some ways mean more than either one of the Mins winning the season in its own right. So these three different outcomes, all of which would have been incredibly satisfying in their own ways.
Totally. Let me ask you, did any of these episodes this time around stand out to you in a way that you hadn't anticipated? Or was it a situation where, once again, you felt like the rewatch, for the most part near the end, was more procedural rather than, oh my god, I'm getting blown away even knowing how this is going?
At the end, it was definitely more procedural, and there were some constants from my first watch where, you know, I still don't fully understand how seed poker is meant to work, for instance, or I've seen one horror race that I really need to see another one, especially with all of these random additions added in, like the puddles and so on, where I don't know that what that game needed was to be more complicated, and that, by and large, that goes for most of the games on the Genius. And I do wonder here, to invoke our, I hope I don't say anything offensive, disclaimer, I wonder if there is a greater cultural acceptance or ability to follow that kind of complicated game, where if you are used to watching the fast-paced action of StarCraft, or you are used to having to follow along with that kind of thing, then a game which, by comparison, is pretty slow, all things considered, maybe is a lot easier to follow, versus our, you know, attention-deficient brains over here in the US, where it's a struggle to make sense of it once you add all of these layers on top.
I mean, the average Survivor viewer is saying, whoa, slow it down, Jeff Probst. I'm used to carpool karaoke. This is a lot going on for me. There were way too many moving parts here.
Right. So, but by and large, I think my views are about the same. And I kind of hope that after 5 years, which hopefully I would have learned something about anything in those 5 years, or I would have changed and matured as a person, or whatever personal development would have been bundled up in that. I hope that maybe it would be easier to follow some of these more complicated games on a rewatch, especially since on the first time through, you expect to be missing some things with a show as dense in the as the Genius when you're watching in your second language. On a rewatch, when it's easier to kind of follow along and pause and so on, I thought it would be easier. It wasn't. I won't say that some of the later episodes like Seed Poker had my undivided attention, but if they had, I think I still would have struggled mightily with them. So a bit of complexity overload, perhaps, for us from our perspective. But I don't know. Was there anything that you really turned around on or found yourself surprised by?
I actually would say the one that I found more interesting this time around than I had anticipated was Seed Poker, actually, where I went in, I think, not remembering as much of it as I did with some of the other ones, which may have played a role here, but I did find that game a bit more interesting than I had remembered finding it the first couple of times around, and when I was so far removed from remembering how any of the kind of specific rounds or like alliances played out that week, it felt, I obviously knew how it was going to go and what the results were going to be, but it felt like watching the actual specifics all over again for the first time, which at least for me was a welcome treat. Obviously wasn't like watching a brand new episode of The Genius, but it was probably the closest to that, and I enjoyed that.
Maybe I need to give myself another shot, yet another shot, at watching that episode. But I don't know when I'm meant to call it quits, if it's not sinking in one more time.
Yeah, it's certainly not the most thrilling or easiest to understand or spectacular visually or whatever. So I certainly understand that it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. But under these exact circumstances, for me, I did enjoy that a lot. And not just episodes, Dom, but I also wanted to ask you, were there any people in the cast that you had, whether good or, I guess, whether positively or negatively, a different opinion on than you were expecting?
Not. I was kind of hoping for that and looking out for that to try and see it. Not really, honestly. I think most people were about as I remember them, about what I expected. I guess I had forgotten just how, like, frantic Jungmoon was at the end, where you get in that classic, like, Big Brother survival-esque death spiral, where you know that you're on the outs and no one's giving you the time of day, but there's nothing you can really do about it. Especially in a team game where you need to work with other people to get anything done. And so that was what kind of kept those episodes that were Jungmoon's swan song a bit more lively for me, actually, where you could see her seeing the writing on the wall and just trying desperately to make something stick, and just nothing came together.
Mm-hmm. I would say I certainly anticipated this sort of behavior from this person, but I had forgotten just the full extent to which Junsak is just 24/7 a young GOP campaign strategist, just like the most face-up opportunist at every possible opportunity, and that is so good.
Yeah, Kyung-hoon gains the moniker of Troll King, but maybe Junsak is the real Troll King, you know? Like, he never breaks the fourth wall on that at any moment.
He's just so shameless about it. He'll negotiate with people and then they'll want their end of the bargain, and he's like, you know, circumstances have changed, that was earlier, that's a separate matter, you know. These shared cards are just an imaginary rule that we made up.
One of my favorites is in Fish Shop, where the people who overlap with his fish go to talk to him, and he's just rocking back and forth in the chair saying $1, you know. It's just that no one can get anything out of him, and they are visibly frustrated about it, but they know, right, what are they going to do, go higher than Junsak? You can't do that. So it's it's just fun to watch him confront people with the obvious facts of what's going on.
And I mean, obviously in Fish Shop, that is for a very deliberate reason that is vital for making sure he gets a token of life that week, but we'll certainly get there shortly. Dom, I wanted to give you the opportunity as the official leader of the Junghyungs to give me your take on your boy, who is going to leave us here in episode 1 5 years later.
Watching that broke my heart all over again. Still my king, with the usual disclaimer of, if he has been cancelled for any reason, then he is not my king, never was my king. I swear allegiance to a new king. But for now, until further notice, he remains with a special place in my heart.
Yeah, I loved having Junghyun back for the All-Star season, but he would probably have been one of my preferred people to be the first boot. I feel like this is almost exactly what I wanted out of Junghyun, is to come back into my life for a little bit, but be one of the people that I'm not as disappointed to see leaving early.
I can't disagree with that, even though I want to, and it is so perfect for me having to watch that in the first episode as a reminder that, hey, there are no sacred cows in this game. You know, you can and will be completely blindsided at any point. And yeah, I think it works so well for that betrayal by Sangmin, if the victim of it is the guy from his own season, as at the beginning of this streak that this sets off of all the season two people getting eliminated back to back to back. If it's the guy who had dealings with Sangmin on his season and was always just like the supercilious observer as Sangmin was going on some like bizarre antics for the week, and he would just be bumbling around and sighing and just trying to follow what was going on. It's so perfect for specifically him to be the victim of Sangmin's craziness here. Either that or one of the other big names. Like if Dongmin goes out in some like shock blindside here, that would also be the perfect way to kick this off. I think if it was one of the more middle ranking players, and it wouldn't have quite the same impact. Like if it was Yuhyun who goes out like that, it's like, oh well, that's sad and fair enough, but you're not shaken to the core by it the way that, I mean, maybe I'm speaking for myself there, but it doesn't have quite the same effect is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm. Am all right with having Junghyun here be our first boot, and I agree with you that losing someone from like the mega top tier that this soon would have been devastating, and losing someone from kind of the next tier down of the kind of like contenders to make a big splash on this season if things go right, but we didn't get to see a whole lot of them from their first time around, that may have been a little underwhelming. And Junghyun was the just right person, I think, for me to be the first boot here. Dom, what did you think now This time around on just the deathmatch format in general. We certainly talked a lot about this as it was going on in real time, but now knowing how all of this is going to go and just how important, frankly, studying the last few deaths match that are left in the basket as the end game is approaching, how crucial that is going to be for determining the winner of the season. What is your ultimate take on the decision for this season only to let everyone know week one, these are the 11 death matches that are going to get played this season. They're going to get played once each. And that's going to be something you can anticipate. What did you think about how that all played out?
I understand it, and if the premise of this is going to be, because this is the All-Star season, this is an homage to what has come before, it makes sense to have some of these classic, or in some cases not so classic, death matches there and force people to play them. And once you do that, I think it makes sense to clear out the question of exactly what those are going to be, so there's no idle, fruitless speculation and people trying to prepare for 40 different death matches at once, just in case it is this super obscure one from season two that no one remembers. So I don't mind that bit so much. I don't know how well the option of banning death matches works. Like, I kind of want to see someone face their worst nightmare, right? I want to see the person who is hopeless of your hap play your hap. Or maybe I don't. Maybe what I want to see is, if it is that lopsided, that's just going to be boring TV. Maybe what I want is people in games that they both feel comfortable in, because you know that's actually going to be a clash that's going to hold your attention.
Yeah, what I think would have been my perfect world kind of scenario, I like the idea of letting them know these are the games in the mix and offering an opportunity for the more dedicated players to have an advantage by practicing during time away from the set for one of, you know, for all of the games that they might end up facing. I think the issue became the pool got so much smaller and smaller and smaller that at certain points death matches were almost foregone conclusions based on who was studying and who wasn't. And I will say, on one hand, I do think it is fitting that it should be virtually impossible to win this season if you are not practicing the death matches when you have that information completely available to you and you know that this is just a matter of time. I do think that in that respect, it is an additional hurdle that I like the eventual champion having to overcome. At the same time, I don't love just how vital studying specific death matches became at certain points. And what I would want is all 11 are in the mix every time, and you each get to get rid of three, and then we're going to randomly draw one of the other five. I think that was the perfect solution.
Yeah, I don't know if it works out so well if you have back-to-back weeks of technical Yutnori or whatever, but
how dare you? That's America's game now, Dom. Of course you know that a tactical Yutnori has swept the nation.
I do see where you're coming from there, and you're right. It is like, if you don't know a theoretical solution, at least, to Monorail by the time it gets to week six, week seven, that is the equivalent to me of not knowing how to make fire on Survivor. Yeah. When you know the fire challenge is coming down the pipeline. And Human's video and the transcript does add a lot of context to this in a few different ways. So firstly, he said that people were practicing those death matches very extensively. By the time we got down to four or five people, that was their sole focus, basically, is that they would show up for the filming, and then when they got home, they would study the death matches. And that was, you know, their singular focus, basically, outside of their any immediate, like, job concerns or anything. And then beyond that, he said that he specifically, that there was some drama with him and Kyung-hoon where, like, he had shown Kyung-hoon, or Kyung-hoon had shown him the solution to Monorail, and then Kyung-hoon was spreading that around and telling other people, but, like, maybe leaving some parts out of it. And there was this whole, like, involved thing about that. And one of the more surprising choices for us when we were watching other season in Dongmin picking Hyunmin for 12 Jangi, that's when we kind of thought, right, that maybe this is the end of the road for Dongmin, or that it seemed like there was no easy mark when it came to 12 Jangi by the time it got down there. That makes sense when you realize that Dongmin had been extensively practicing. Like, they had, he and Kyung-hoon had both been practicing online and, like, getting real-life coaching and practicing, and in some cases with the same people, so there was some, like, back-and-forth intel going on. And so it was almost a point of pride for them, or by the end, that they were the best person at 12 Drangi. More so than, yeah, I'm you know, the greatest tactical Yutnori player in the whole province of Seoul or whatever. Like, this was what you hang your hat on. And so that choice, it was a kind of statement by Dongwon that, yeah, I can handle anyone in 12 Drangi. I'll be human. And he did. And apparently after that, he then challenged Kyunghoon and beat Kyunghoon too. Even though Kyunghoon thought that he was like some truly elite, like grandmaster level 12 Drangi player at that point, Dongwon effortlessly kicked his ass. So, yeah, that dynamic is something we didn't really get to see, and it makes sense why, but it's really fun to know about after the fact.
That must, I was thinking, that must have been such a sweat for the players near the end, where, you know, there's not a lot of studying you can do for Quattro or whatever, which was one of the later death matches, but to have specifically 12 Drangi be the last one left that you know is getting played the next week, and there are just like infinite timelines, even for a 12 square board or whatever, there's so many different permutations that you need to practice. I'm positive I remember talking about back in the day. Well, I hope these final three enjoy their entire week of doing nothing but playing 12 Drangi, because I'm guessing that is more or less what ended up happening. And I'm honestly okay with that. I think once it was down to probably the final five, it was fine with me, because it seemed like all of them were very likely to go home and study super hard on these death matches, and it was going to be more or less a fair fight. What I thought was not good was, for instance, like Kyungran having a career outside of this and things to do, meaning she's drawing totally dead against any of them at probably any of those games when she goes in. Or, for instance, the one that really stood out to me was Dr. Yansung, when he and Junsak were playing their death match and they went to the lottery to see what game it was going to be. As soon as they saw that it was monorail, Junsak just started laughing because he knew that Kyunghoon knew the solution and would tell him, and he knew that Dr. Yansung did not.
Yeah, and that kind of imbalance, I don't know if there's a good way to address it necessarily. You can't force the players to make the time or have the time to study all of this effectively, and then of course some of them can choke in the moment and so on, but maybe that's just the range of death matches that they use. Maybe if it was something like Indian poker, where you can prepare, you can get your reps in, but ultimately it does come down to how well you do in the moment across the table, maybe a greater focus on those games would have helped that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And what did you also think about the other big format twist this season, Garnet matches, where for the first time a winner is going to be, and loser are both going to be determined by who ends this main match with the most garnets?
Yeah, Yoan is the real game changer, fan favorite, as it turns out. Here, I do think it's good to shut off that theoretical possibility of someone like Yoan just getting to the end despite not having any garnets and showing how useless they were at that time as a concept. I don't know if this is a massive overcorrection in the other direction, though, because it was kind of difficult to follow the actual ins and outs of who had how many garnets at what time during the garnet matches. And then you don't know how much the threat of a garnet match is making play in other matches more conservative, where normally you might want to bribe someone to do something with garnets, but it's tough to justify doing that when you know that there's a garnet match in the near future.
Mm-hmm. I did like the idea. I thought it added an interesting element for sure. I would be curious, though, to find out if they did end up thinking about making a Genius 5, if they would want to include garnet matches again.
I don't know, honestly. And I don't know what other changes they would make. It may be that knowing that this was their last season, it was okay, well, we're going to do this, and whether or not it works, it doesn't matter, right? There's not much use in introspection after the fact unless you're going on to design other shows, other games. One of the many sad things about the franchise ending is we don't get that kind of continuity. We don't get that follow through on what did we learn from this season and how would we make it even better if we were to do it again.
Yeah, I would also be very curious to know what kind of changes they would want to make if they did end up doing a Genius 5. It doesn't seem like we are going to ever find out, although my thought about a hypothetical Genius 5, and maybe I mean, first of all, this is obviously based on nothing, but just because of some of the other returnees they have brought back, I would imagine that would be potentially likely, and I would not have been surprised at all if we saw a Genius 5 where, much like in the Genius 2, they brought back Jinho and Sangmin. I really was mentally preparing myself for a Genius 5 where Hyunmin and Kyunghoon come in and just wreck a bunch of new players.
I would love to see that too. I would have no complaints about that either.
Yeah. All right. Well, what did you think of our first actual Garnet match here, Horror Race? One of the more complicated games, but as far as an episode went, as far as the episodes went, I found myself enjoying this one a lot more than I had remembered the first time, and maybe it was because I finally was aware of how little time I was going to get to have with Sangmin. But what did you think of this one this time around?
So I found the first Horror Race actually more fun than I expected, easier to follow, and just watching the downfall of Yoan, maybe earlier than I had even anticipated that, was kind of fun to see. And then by the time we got to the second Horror Race, my eyes had fully glazed over and I was tuned out, and I'd had enough Horror Racing for one season.
Oh, hand up on this one. Horror Race 2, I watched the first 10 minutes or so and eventually just said, I am drawing dead at understanding the actual nuances here, and it doesn't really matter for the podcast that I'm doing today, so I just skipped a lot of that second Horror Race. Sorry, folks. But I thought Episode 2 Horror Race was a lot of fun, just because not even just this episode, but these early episodes in general, and I thought this was one where it really stood out, is this is, again, at the point where they don't know who is going to go on to win. And one of the things I think that I really, really enjoy about the Genius, and maybe this is just because I spend all my other time talking about Survivor, where they are just so humiliatingly inclined, as far as I would be concerned, to whitewash the winner's flaws and make sure that's the person everyone's rooting for all along, if at all possible. They don't have that luxury on the Genius, and I feel like with their former winners and obviously their eventual winner here in season 4 as well, during these early episodes, they had so many moments where they would include these legends of the franchise still looking like idiots and getting things wrong, and I really, really enjoy that about this show compared to what I'm used to.
And it was so touching, in a way, to see that deathmatch with Jinho helping Yoan to little effect. The two of them are just like oil and water, it seems, when it comes to working together. Versus Dongmin and Yunsung on the other side. Of course, Dongmin somehow steals the show in a deathmatch where he is not even officially playing in it. But it's just fun to see the two of them kind of, even to the last, trying to work together and just not be able to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dongmin, with his ability to pick out the weight differences in these like tiny metal washers that are inside the various coins, is unbelievable. And like, think about how superhuman you have to be for the producers to have to come on and put up a card that says, we thought it would be impossible to physically distinguish the different metals inside of these coins, but it seems that was not the case. Is complete ownage of the production team.
And hey, props to the production team for acknowledging that, because it would be very easy for them to say, yeah, of course this was intentional, but just only Dongmin was the one to get it, which still bigs up Dongmin at no cost to themselves. But I like that they accepted the possible hit to their own reputation in order to enhance Dongmin's even further by saying, like, yeah, we're putting our hands up. We did not anticipate this happening. Dongmin actually just out-leveled us as well as all the other contestants.
Yeah, I also loved, along similar lines, one of my favorite moments probably of all of the Genius 4 is when Jinho takes his first turn and pulls out three of the same color, and the big group thinks that all of their plans are ruined because Jinho figured out the trick and he's just going to be able to pull out whatever he wants every time. And they're all like scrambling to figure out how they could possibly overcome this. And then it just cuts to a confessional of Jinho saying, yeah, that was a pretty wild coincidence. I have no idea how that happened.
Oh, I love that too. That was so great.
And also, I skipped this in season one, but another Jinho confessional that just kills me every time is after Sangmin betrays the whole group during ID exchange and everyone's freaking out, and we cut to a confessional of Jinho's thoughts after the main match, and he's just like, ah, yeah, that was a bit annoying. Like, what does it take to get this guy off his game? And I love Jinho, by the way. Like, Dongmin and Sangmin, I feel like, are perhaps justifiably often treated, or at least presented, like these gods among men in the Genius Hall. They certainly weave in the plenty of funny moments of them just being completely off base about various things. But with Jinho in particular, I really appreciate the balance that I feel like they were able to strike with him on all three of his seasons, where there are so many cases of this guy is kind of isolating himself, or he can't speak properly, or he has the totally wrong idea and LOL at Jinho. And then they're also willing to say, this guy has single-handedly come up with a way to crack the game and overcome this majority alliance, and you should appreciate his ability to do that.
I think it's good to have something of a straight man compared to these massive personalities you have with Dongmin and with Sangmin. And Heung-min kind of offers that, but he is pretty frenetic in his own way at times. So I love that Jinho is always measured to the point of absurdity sometimes, and then when you do see this flash of anger or frustration from him, it really is a good exclamation point for whatever that moment is. And
for sure.
I think three massive personalities like that could get overwhelming. You don't want all Jinhos, you don't want all Dongmins and Sangmins, but a good mix really helps to keep things moving. And I would say that I'm the Jinho to your Dongmin, or Sangmin if you prefer.
I don't think either of those is anywhere close to accurate, but Jinho.
Am I the human to your? Are you my my Sunbae?
Maybe. I think we may be getting warmer there. I definitely remember saying this as an observation that I had 5 years ago, which is dumb. I am 5.5 years older than you. Based on what I am seeing in The Genius, you really need to step it the fuck up in your respect for your elders department.
Hold on. I just had a terrifying thought. Am I now older than you were back then?
You're the same age, yeah. I mean, it was 5 years, 3 months ago that we were talking about The Genius 4 in real time, and you were 5 years, 6 months younger than me, so enjoy, buddy.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, but I already forgot what I was about to say about that.
Yeah.
What
were the ravages of age making themselves known.
Yeah, seriously. Enjoy this 5 years from now. So there goes Yeowon in episode 2. He does lose that tactical Yutenori match in pretty humiliating fashion. And I will fully cop, by the way, to being a person who has now probably spent a full 5 hours. I can't even imagine how much time I have spent watching Tactical Yutenori on my various Genius rewatches. Still no idea what three of the four things are. I understand Bakdo. I get that one, but the other three, anytime they would come up, absolutely clueless.
I have, since our coverage then, I have actually played Tactical Yutenori in person, and I can assure you it was just as confusing then, even with some helpful visual aids to make the whole thing run more smoothly.
Okay, I will be avoiding probably the local Tactical Yutenori circuit for the foreseeable future. Dom, let's get into...
I need a niche somewhere, because, you know, Ian Terry has cornered the backgammon market, and it sounds like you have too, obviously crushing it on the poker scene. I need a game where no one else plays it, first of all, and also when no one else who does play knows the rules, that I can really make myself the best at. So maybe Tactical Yutenori is going to be my last refuge there.
Well, so Ian Terry, not only absolutely murdering the backgammon scene, I believe it is the case that Ian ordered a bunch of these death matches and trained himself to, I know he memorized a huge percentage of the monorail permutations. I'm pretty confident he put in a lot of work on both 12 Jangi and Gyul Hap, and I'm willing to put it out there. I'll back Ian Terry against you at whatever death match you want. Although I say that now, remembering that you did play death matches against Ian Terry once, and I don't remember how that went. So maybe you've already won.
I believe I have beat Ian Terry at Indian Poker before. So scoreboard, if anyone's keeping track at home. But other than that, I too would bet on Ian Terry against me in any conceivable deathmatch.
All right. So let's get into Dom episode 3. And I got to say, from minute one, I was just depressed when I was watching this episode, just knowing what I was in store for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Obviously going to be the week where we are going to lose Sangmin here, but you know, with so much time having passed, and not having to deal with the devastation of knowing I could have had Sangmin all season long, but he's gone now in episode 3 and we have to just move on without him. Now that we are 5 years in the future, I really do think it is an important episode insofar as establishing to the audience your favorites are not safe. As you said, or what, there are no sacred cows? Is that the saying?
It's a saying.
Okay. I think it is very valuable for the franchise to make it clear that anyone is vulnerable any given week. And I really do feel like at that point in the Genius's history, there was no clearer way of saying that than Sangmin being the one who left.
Yeah, I don't want Sangmin to leave, but I want Sangmin to have left while still having Sangmin. I want to, like, have my cake and eat it too.
I want to know that Sangmin is vulnerable.
Yeah, I want it to be not inevitable from the beginning. I want to think that, you know, I can come in here 1 week or come in here 5 years ago 1 week and say, it seems like player X is a lock to make it deep in the season. I really like what they're doing so far. And for that player to leave the very next week and make me look like an idiot. I want that to be on the table at all times.
So Sangmin was coming off of, obviously, a win in the Genius 2 where he won, I think it was the last 7 consecutive main matches there and then won the finals. He is going to win both of the first 2 main matches this season before, obviously, everything comes crumbling apart in today's menu. What do you feel like Sangmin's goals were this season? Because he talked in the premiere about gunning for a perfect win. And I do wonder if after steamrolling everyone so hard in season 2, he was really just literally trying to win every single main match along the way, because that was the only way he could outdo himself.
I think he absolutely was. And at the time, back in 2015, we made the Sangmin-Tony Vlachos comparisons. And sorry to Tony for butchering his name, too. Even though he is not Korean, that's still too high on the difficulty scale for me to enunciate properly. But we made those comparisons back in the day. And those, I think, have aged somewhat beautifully since then, because we saw in Survivor Game Changers in 2017, Tony having a Sangmin-esque trajectory on that season, where, you know, he flames out early, goes out, and was clearly crushed and devastated by it. But he came in there saying, the only way I can do this again is by just going 0 to 100, never taking my foot off the gas pedal. And that is exactly what Sangmin did. So I hope that we get to complete this parallel, and that Sangmin's going to come back and win again when the Genius 5 arrives back on our screens in a few years. But I do enjoy how these two players, who in their own ways are completely inimitable, none of them is really like anyone else, do have a kind of similar story arc, if nothing else.
I just learned a new word. Can't spell it, but have at least heard it now. So yeah, I totally agree with all of that. I would, at this point, be obviously over the moon for the prospect of Sangmin coming back for a Genius 5, although I will not be holding my breath in that regard. I wanted to ask about the kind of trick that we saw in the Today's Menu game, where the boxes where they place their food orders have a hidden panel. And so even if the group says, all right, we're all gonna show each other what we have on the top, and then we'll close our boxes together, they were still able, Sangmin and Kyunghoon, to get away with one here in the second round because of that hidden panel that would allow them to hide a card behind it. And then when they close the box, that'll put it on the top once it slaps down. I don't feel like we saw too many tricks like that along the way here in the Genius 4, and even the ones that we saw where people were kind of taking advantage of the props, like Dongmin in the previous week being able to pick the coins based on the weight, seemed unintentional. Did you feel like that was something that was potentially one of the reasons that this season didn't hit as hard for you on a rewatch? Because I do feel like those kind of cool hacks are a big piece of the rewatch value.
See, I would say that those cool hacks are a big part of the first-time viewing experience, where it's so easy for them to build up this narrative over the course of an episode, and then, you know, this one simple trick just reveals everything, and you get this amazing moment, like with, you know, Jinho in Open Pass, for example. And then when you know that those moments are coming on a rewatch, it's still exciting because, you know, the anticipation builds, you know what's coming, but it doesn't have quite the same...
So I totally agree with that. I think, for sure, the hacks and big reveals have a much bigger effect the first time around. I just feel like a lot of the rewatch value on the earlier seasons, of which I think there is a ton, has to do with how they set things up for those big moments when you know they are coming. And there are so many things that they weave in there that will only stand out on a rewatch. And that I felt like was potentially missing from this season, just given there weren't that many things to build up to.
I could see that for sure. And I do think in general, there was a lack of these big set piece moments this season that revolved around some hacks in the game. You obviously have the amazing reveal at the end of Fish Shop when the tables are turned on human, and the joint match win in Garnet Thief. There's stuff like that, but there's nothing where, oh, I thought we were playing a totally different game this whole time because there's this one simple trick that explains everything. And Human actually called this out himself in that breakdown video, where he said that in season 3, there was a lot of that. You think back to like the Constellation game, for instance, or some of the other main matches from that season, where if you were on the ball and you could identify the trick, then you were a step above the competition. In this season, there's a lot more politicking games, you know, Garnet Thief, Seed Poker, where it's less about can you find the hack, can you like what can you find the punchline, and it's a lot more, well, I form a good alliance, I form a good connection with people, the kind of bread and butter social gameplay, which is definitely fun to watch when you have interesting characters doing it, but not quite in the same way. And so it did lack some of that pizzazz
for sure. So let's, I guess, give some parting thoughts here on Sangmin. I did love that in his kind of swan song episode, we got to have what it wasn't a big moment like these hacks and big reveals that we're talking about, but we did get one last kind of bit of Sangmin magic where he gets to hide under the table and eavesdrop on like 2 hours worth of meetings. That was a ton of fun. And then just having him leave the room, it seemed like, you know, leave the Genius like arena or whatever they call it, the hall, the main hall, shaking hands with the dealers and so forth. Even through the TV, I really got the sense that Sangmin's elimination stood out much more so than any other elimination from any of the seasons.
For sure. And it's good that we get to see Sangmin back in various forms over the course of the season. Just his arrival as Bandage Man, still one of the highlights for me. The Genius, to me, I think there's a good case to be made. Dongmin is not just the best Genius player, but the best player of this type of game, given the particular context. But to me, the Genius is about Sangmin. It's about, you know, someone sent me a very interesting, very detailed breakdown of how you could make a good case. Sangmin's entire reputation as a Genius player is massively overblown, completely overrated. So much of it comes down to flukes, or him being bailed out by other people, or these crazy twists and turns of fate. The one thing you can't deny is Sangmin is this electric personality, and to me is that combination of just like mischief as well as everything else that makes Sangmin the most iconic Genius player for me, even though, you know, you may have views one way or the other about his actual record.
I am very open to the possibility that Sangmin got very lucky in many of these main matches along the way. I feel like if you went back and listened to our coverage, there were probably going to be a lot of spots where we are questioning what Sangmin is really doing over the course of some various main matches, and certainly ID Exchange would be a glaring example of that. It seemed like selling out the entire group to save Kyunghoon made absolutely no sense in that moment and was actively bad for his game, but I think he was just gunning it. And I do also think if he had won this main match against Kyunghoon as recently as the end of today's menu, he is able to convince Dongmin in a situation where everyone else is eager to freeze out Sangmin and Kyunghoon. He gets Dongmin back on his side, and Dongmin does try to help keep him safe. When he's in the deathmatch, Kyungran lies to Kyunghoon to try to keep Sangmin safe. I really do think if Sangmin wins this and Kyunghoon is eliminated, Sangmin could show up to week four with a completely clean slate.
Yeah, which is wild when you think about it. And the one big question that I have with Sangmin after all these years is, has he paid off his debts finally yet?
I think he's gradually working his way down. I think it sounds like there are like Korean tabloids dedicated exclusively to tracking Sangmin's debts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or at least there were in 1992. I don't know about recently. But yeah, Sangmin, without a doubt, in the mix at the very least for my absolute all-time number one TV character in the history of reality TV. I think you are dead right in saying Dongmin is probably the only really defensible pick at this point for best player of the genius, but I do agree with you that Sangmin is the defining player of the genius.
Even looking at those Tony parallels, because a lot of people said the same thing about Tony, the Tony that we saw on Winners of War was a much more tame Tony, and some of that was his own by design, insofar as he could keep it up for that long, where he knew he had to be harmless and fly under the radar for a little bit. And then, of course, the real Tony came out. And then part of that was the editing, which we made a lot of, I think, justified criticisms of the editing in Winners of War, which it follows the same formula that we've had for the past few Survivor seasons, but it was sad to see that apply to this, you know, the best cast we're ever going to see on the show again, frankly. Whereas on the Genius, I have enough faith in them that, you know, Sangmin is giving them a perfect raw material to work with, and I always have faith in them that they're going to fashion something fantastic out of that.
For sure. So there goes Sangmin, unfortunately. Dom, let's get into episode 4, Fish Shop. One of my all-time favorites, as I think I've already said, somewhere along the way here, and this is a perfect illustration for my money of what I'm talking about when I say, when you know what's coming, this is a completely different episode. And I would strongly encourage people to go back and rewatch this one in particular, because I thought the way they set this all up is genius. And I certainly, sorry for an uncreative choice of word there, but like brilliant, the way that they were able to weave in so many of these Easter eggs. Like to me, a parallel I recently made is the Genius is like the Arrested Development to Survivor's like Big Bang Theory. Like there is so much more going on here that it's borderline unfair to even compare them as similar types of game shows. And Fish Shop is maybe even the epitome of that kind of storytelling that the Genius is so good at, where they spend, it's got to be close to 60 full minutes setting up this narrative about how Hyunmin is the lock winner, and it's just a matter of which of Jin-ho or Dr. Yansung is going to come in last place. They drop the hammer on us, and then they spend maybe 5 minutes giving us the reveal on how the complete opposite ended up happening in such a way as to leave me totally fulfilled and happy and blown away with what I just saw.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece from start to finish, and on a rewatch, it's hard to be objective about it because you know what's coming. You know that Human is about to discover what we all discovered with him in real time there. But it felt like, in edging terms, this was too easy for you, Human, right? Something was about to go wrong at the end. If it had been, everyone says Human's going to win, and then Human does win, then that ultimately is not a satisfying episode. What we got instead was a tremendously satisfying episode. But that's maybe a good example where it's not that there was so much fun stuff going on for the first 40, 50 minutes, and the episode is good from start to finish. It's the episode is building toward this crescendo, and when that drops, that's the payoff. That's what we've spent all this time on with stuff which, frankly, would not be as interesting otherwise. But you you're more than happy to accept it because you get this incredible payoff in return.
So to pull another legendary sitcom into the mix here, one of my other all-time favorites, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I feel like there are so many times where I'm watching Curb, and anyone who's seen the show and is familiar with that format will know what I'm talking about, where something that Larry will do early on will stand out and you'll say, okay, that's going to come back and pay off later. That's definitely remember that, because that's going to be tied in as these stories dovetail at the end. And somehow 28 minutes later, I still find myself blown away when they manage to weave it back in after I have forgotten about it. And I feel like this is something the Genius is really good at as well, where they set up, you're totally right. You're totally right that yes, it does seem like it's way too easy for Hyunmin to actually just from start to finish be the clear winner of this game. But I think what they're so good at is they set you on that one path, and then they give you kind of the decoy twist. And in this case, it is somewhere along the way, it seems like, yeah, things are going great for Hyunmin, and then as far as you're concerned when you're watching the first time, the big twist is, okay, now Dongmin is going to give us the reveal of the full plan, and we find out now he's going to go mark all the other fish that Hyunmin isn't going to be able to be on and make sure no one can make any money there, and that's like the critical part B of this plan that is going to work out so successfully. And meanwhile, we have to worry about who's going to come in last between Jinho and Yeonsung, and they're able to just kind of distract you from that sort of thought. Or the same way in ID Exchange, it seems like the big twist is going to be Junsok doesn't want to give up the card, and then they completely come in with the haymaker from the other direction, which is not only is Hyunmin not the winner, he's the loser, and Yeonsung is the winner, not the loser. And in ID Exchange, it's Sangmin's had this in his literal back pocket all along, and like Curb Your Enthusiasm, despite knowing full well that that's exactly what I should be expecting, they are so good at making me forget all about it. And maybe I'm just an idiot, but I feel like that's a pretty common takeaway.
What elevates this season's episodes, top episodes, even further is that we are familiar from season two of with Sangmin single-handedly stealing the show, dominating an episode, and really carrying the season on his back for that period of time. When I think of ID Exchange and Today's Menu and Fish Shop, these truly are ensemble performances by this cast, where a lot of that is Junsok doing some really great work in ID Exchange and honestly, Fish Shop too, but also Today's Menu. But it's also, you know, you have Kyung-hoon doing his thing, whatever that is, if you can even pin it down. You have all this stuff going on. It's not just the Sangmin Show, which, hey, I would take 60 seasons in a movie of the Sangmin Show. I'll take however much they want to give me. But it's kind of nice that you get everyone else contributing to that as well.
Speaking of the Sangmin Show, did you ever check out God of Music?
I tried it. It was... yeah, like if it was about Sangmin, it would be one thing, but it's a Korean variety show featuring Sangmin, and that's that didn't do it for me.
Well, I saw the first episode or two, and it was almost exclusively about Sangmin, if I'm thinking of the right thing, and it's like a comedy. I thought it was very funny, and I was disappointed that I kind of put off watching it for a while, and then was not able to get back to it in time to be able to stream it.
Yeah, I may be mixing it up with one of the other various shows that he's appeared on, but yeah, the more Sangmin, the better. A show is good if it has Sangmin, and the more Sangmin it has, the better it is, to borrow a tweet format.
What was so interesting is it's called God of Music, but it's a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing about Sangmin being like a washed-up 90s star, and he's hanging out with other famous musicians, and like people come over and want to take selfies, and he thinks he's being invited into the selfie, but they're like cropping him out. It's so funny to see the other side of Sangmin, where he's not this like godly figure.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to think about. I'm offended on Sangmin's behalf with these people.
Well, he's aware. Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to say, sorry for that sidetrack, about Fish Shop is I think it is also just so good for the show, in the same way that I think it's good for the show that we are aware, hey, our heroes like Sangmin, anyone even up to and including Sangmin, could go at any time. I think Fish Shop this season and Constellation Game in season 3 are such important episodes in their respective seasons, just to make it clear, Dongmin and Hyunmin are vulnerable. This is not just going to go their way every time.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a really important thing to have happen. And also just love seeing some fresh faces get into the mix as far as the Tokens of Life are concerned. Dr. Yansung, my man, as I was rewatching season 3 and podcasting about that. So always a very fun episode for me. And of course, the high five between Junsak and Yansung over Hyunmin's head as he is finding out that he did not win and he in fact lost is another just all-time genius moment for me. So that was a lot of fun all over again.
I did love when Yansung says later, I think it's maybe in the intro in the next episode, that he was not intending to, like, pop off or anything. He was going to keep it hidden and then just give Junsung the Token of Life, maybe try and disguise that a little more. And then Junsung was like, we did it, Yansung, and high-fived him. It's like, okay, well, I guess the cat is out of the bag now.
Yeah, I think story checks out there that it was Junsung who was the one who was enthusiastic about making it clear that this was mission accomplished to the whole group.
Always finding ways to cause mischief, even when it's relatively harmless.
Yeah, one name, unfortunately, that hasn't come up too much over the course of this podcast to this point, and frankly just didn't come up too much over the course of her limited time on this season, which feels like more or less the same thing we found ourselves saying about her the first time on The Genius 2. Lawyer Yoon-sun may be my number one pick out of all of the Genius casts for people I really wish we got to see more of. I felt like she could have been a really fun presence on the TV product and in a lot more of the main matches. It just, both times for her seemed like everything broke wrong.
She is a somewhat tragic figure in a way, right? Where it's pretty clear from the outset, the majority group isn't really going to accept her. And even when she can get her ragtag band of outsiders together, it all ends up falling apart one way or another. But she always keeps fighting, keeps trying, and even when she has to, like, admit defeat and work with the majority, she's always, like, on her guard and skeptical and looking for the people who are about to double-cross her. And I just love the kind of spirit that she brings to the season, where she doesn't have the same, like, level of whimsy as most of the big characters, but that's good. Building on what I said before, I like that contrast. I like having someone who is, like, this really successful, conventional professional in this game, which seemed often to reward anything but.
100%. I totally agree with that. And along similar lines, I was very, very disappointed that we didn't get to see more out of Yuyun this season. You know, Poker Alliance member Yuyun, where he ends up being eliminated in episode 5, Loyalists and Rebels. It seems like just from start to finish this episode, he also just couldn't catch a break. He gets a pretty bad draw in the role distribution, finds himself in the death match against Kyung Ran, where they're playing Indian Hold'em or Indian Poker, whichever one is the more modern version, sorry, and just gets unlucky there as well. I feel like he is another person that I really wish we got to see more of. Like Yoon-sun, I was thrilled to see him get another chance in this All-Stars cast, and as far as Yuyun is concerned, he really impressed me his first time around, and based on what little we got to see of him this time around, and I feel like he could be a case where if he were just on different seasons, he may be regarded as one of the best players ever. He seemed to have a very, very strong mind for a ton of the games. I just think he got unlucky, not only in this one episode, but just in the grand scheme of his Genius career, to be up against Dongmin and Hyunmin in 100% of his episodes.
Yeah, and he's someone who I think is the classic example of a figure that we always hype up maybe more than we should, because yeah, he's a poker player and he speaks perfect English, and all of that is music to our ears. And those people always tend to underperform the high hopes that we set for them.
I don't care what languages people speak, for the record. I'm not like Dom. I'm not a John Rocker speak English guy. But that's just to clarify.
Well, thank you for issuing that disclaimer.
Dom Rocker over here. You're getting us canceled.
Christ. So, where was I exactly?
You were saying something that I completely agree with, which is we probably are the types to be very inclined to give, to err on the side of giving Yu Yun credit.
Yeah, but maybe more than we should. And I don't know if I would even revise that assessment necessarily based on what we saw of him this season, where this is the first game where his name really comes up at all. And it's because he's a rebel and in a game which I think is quite poorly designed and the rebels get a really tough draw of it, almost regardless of who they are. And before that, he could have been the victim in Fishhop. He could have been the one, maybe not high-fiving Kyung-hoon. I don't know if that's his style, but the two of them could have celebrated it in their own way at that reveal. But it you know, just so happened the way it broke. The other team won it instead with the same strategy. So I'm sure he has his regrets about the way that the season went, especially coming off season three, which I think also was, you know, he made a much deeper run, but also never really gained any traction.
I think he probably would have been the Dr. Yansung in that equation, not wanting to initiate a high five, but being forced to be the second half of it when Kyung-hoon comes over and tries to high five him.
Kyung-hoon is going to wrap him in some massive bear hug and he's going to look uncomfortable. Yeah, it's just something like that.
Yeah, I would say, though, it's not, oh, they both implemented the same strategy and the other team just happened to catch a break. To return to crazy old man Junsok just rocking back and forth in his chair saying $1, $1. That was not him just being a dick to people for the sake of being a dick to people. That was a very deliberate and ultimately game-winning distinction in their strategy where while Kyung-hoon and Yu-yeon were both putting a dollar on each of the fish, that was still opening the door for Yansung to profit in certain spots where Junsok, who was on all of the fish, Yansung was not on, by making it clear to everyone on all of those fish every single time, you better put a dollar because otherwise you're not going to get anything. He was ensuring that no one else could make any money and essentially giving Yansung a free roll.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I don't want to sell them short by any means.
Yeah, no, you are right that virtually identical strategies, but just that one nuance is what set them apart, and I really loved seeing that implemented. But anyway, unfortunate, I thought, to put it lightly, the way that Yu-yeon is going to end up going out here. And also, I get it, I'm sure he gets it, but like, poker is a game with tons of variance, and anything could happen especially when you're playing in a game where draws mean that all the money stays in the pot and now we're just flipping a coin. If it's just nuts against nuts, the next hand is just going to determine everything. To have it be just the most brutally unlucky day of the genius for him already, and then as he's on his way out, it looks like he's getting this perfect spot where he goes all in when Kyung-ran has a one and he knows he can't possibly lose, and she thinks and thinks and thinks forever, finally calls, and he's, I'm sure, internally fist pumping because, of course, I just doubled up. She has a one and she had to think about it, so obviously I don't have a one. I have a higher card than her. I'm going to be the favorite now. And he flips over a one himself, just gets slow rolled to death on his way out as she like has to think about whether or not to call when he has the worst possible card.
And he should not really have been in that death match anyway, by all accounts, where you think what has to happen for Yu-hyun to go out in that episode. First of all, he has to draw the rebel role where, yeah, he handles that poorly, gets caught out by Kyung-hoon, and then basically throws himself on his sword the way he has to. But really, anybody who ended up as a rebel was going to have a very tough time of it. And I think we said after that episode, I kind of want to peek into this alternate timeline where Dongmin is a rebel, right? Or like where Hyunmin is a rebel, or you have some of the real top tier players forced into the rebel category instead. So that was unfortunate from the get-go. And then once we get to Kyung-ran having to pick someone for the deathmatch, she picks Yu-hyun specifically because she is so mad at Jung-moon that she wants to be able to focus when she's playing against her, and also does not want to leave on like a sour note, and she wants to be like, Kyung-ran is very fatalistic about these death matches. She thinks she's going to lose if she goes to one. And so when she faces Yu-yeon, her attitude is, well, I'd rather lose to him, and I'm going to lose to him or lose to Jung-moon, and I'd rather lose to him. So Hyung, let's go into the death match together. And then she wins, and it's like, well, okay, this wasn't meant to happen.
Right. Both times where she goes, she loses the main match, and overtly says, I'm picking the person that I will be least embarrassed to lose to. She picks Dongmin the second time.
Which I guess is a damning with faint praise or praising with faint damnation for the other person. But
I'm sure you guys, I mean, in their spot, in the Loyalists and Rebels scenario, Jungmoon was the only other person who was eligible, and the group essentially agreed to let her live if she sold out the other two.
Mm-hmm.
So it did not a ton of choice there for her, but I think it was she didn't remove the poker games because she was, it seemed to me, it's certainly not trying to lose, but trying to make a loss as painless as possible, and there would be nothing embarrassing about losing at poker to a professional poker player.
For sure.
Yeah. And again, I think for Kyungran, I'm sure she enjoyed her time on The Genius for the most part, but she stood out to me as the person in this cast who was going to have no problem moving on and finding a different career, TV, not career opportunity, but she's going to be on more TV shows no matter what she does here. And this is not going to be the end of the world for her if she loses.
Yeah, I'm sure Jungmoon has gone on to bigger and better things and is either like a famous TV personality or some engineer at like the Korean equivalent of Google or NASA, or maybe both at the same time. Who knows?
Yes. All right. So next match here, we have Garnet Thief, another Garnet match, another one for me that I felt like, as I was saying about Fish Shop, the rewatch is really fun when you know what's coming and you are in right away on both Jungmoon and Kyunghoon being spies. And this is another one where they set you up in terms of, okay, it's 4-on-4, and then the fake twist is, oh, hey, Jungmoon's been a spy all along, but Hyunmin missed the sign, and now they're freezing her out, and how's this going to go? And then we get the actual reveal of, oh, they also had Kyunghoon all along, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think they do an awesome job setting up so much of that when you do know what to be looking for. But any major thoughts for you on Garnet match? This is certainly one where the rules and strategies of the game are far too intricate for us to get into at a time like this, but a really fun episode, at least for me, every time.
Also, way too intricate for us to get into at the time as well. I think when we did our episode recap analysis for Garnet Thief, we were also a bit nonplussed about what was going on and just kind of had to take it on good faith that the explanations made sense.
Yes, that was probably the case more often than we even admitted on these podcasts, but certainly one such situation here. This is also where we're going to be losing my man, Dr. Yeonsung, when he unfortunately draws Monorail, and that is only ever going to go one way there. But I guess we can move it along from that into Seed Poker, an episode that I didn't have the highest expectations for on this rewatch. I know I already said that it certainly exceeded those expectations, but before we get into that, I want to just give a quick shout out to the practice runs that they let them do for some of these games on The Genius, where the producers essentially say, yeah, we get that this is pretty complicated, so we're going to let you do a free roll version where there's nothing at stake, and you guys can just play the game out and see how it works and go from there in building your strategies. I think this is so, so massive. And I know the other shows we are covering don't generally need to give people practice time to wrap their minds around all the crazy strategic nuances, but I do love that the producers just cared enough about the players and the quality of the games to recognize what a good decision this was.
Yeah, if only us as the viewers could have got access to a practice run as well, then maybe all of this could have been better. But definitely, you know, you don't really want to see them fumbling through the game because they don't understand the rules. It can be fun when someone like makes some oversight and then loses in dramatic fashion because of it. But as a general principle, you don't want to see them just like bombarding human with questions, which apparently was what happened just as a default all the time, where the rules of a game would be announced and they would go to human for a crash course in understanding them, which honestly is a lot of power to have. And it's like, well, I don't want to take human to the deathmatch because first of all, he's going to beat me. But secondly, if I beat him, then who's going to explain to me next week exactly what I should be doing?
Yeah, that's a good point. This is a spot where we're ultimately going to see kind of, depending on who was sitting on which side of the seed poker table, different alliances forming. that are pretty fluid over the course of the game, almost like bafflingly fluid, where they're all right in front of each other and they can see who's talking to whom constantly, but are still having faith in tons of people to relay messages accurately and give them information back accurately. But after all of this kind of chaos and weirdness going on with the poker element of it all and the political element of it all, we are going to see Jungmoon, despite, as far as I could tell, Dongmin spending more or less the entire endgame of this competition essentially saying, there's not much I can do to prevent Jungmoon from being last if I want to be involved in the winning side of this, so I'm kind of leaving her out to dry and aiming for victory and the token of life here. We get to a situation at the end of this main match where Jinho, on the other end of the table, is going so far out of his way to help Jungmoon purely because he sees Dongmin is leaving her out to dry, and I am just not down with that. I don't want to play this way. I want her to have a chance to fight here. And he gives her the extra outs to stay alive. If she just, like, calls, she's not going to finish last. And Dongmin, who has been actively tanking her chances throughout, somehow talks her into folding the nuts to prevent herself from going, from staying out of the death match, more or less, where she has, on one hand, Jinho actively working to help save her, and Dongmin swooping in at the last minute to try to get her to one last time do whatever it takes to help him. She chooses Dongmin, and at this point, Dom, after watching 7 episodes or whatever, it finally dawned on me, 6 of these 7 episodes have ended with literally everyone just going to Dongmin to tell them what to do. What's my final decision here? How do we end this?
It's baffling. Yeah, and I've said this before, where Dongmin's brand of charisma doesn't really make too much sense to me. Like, it doesn't pop on the screen. I can see why people listen to Sangmin, because I'm transfixed when I'm watching Sangmin. I don't get the same thing with Dongmin. He's like he's the Parvati Shallow of the genius for me, where it's like, I believe that you believe, but it doesn't make sense to me. It's not having the same effect. I'm sure in person I would be, you know, joining the queue like everybody else to get my orders from Dongmin. But it doesn't make that much sense. And so I think, on top of Dongmin's personality in his own right seeming very, like, abrasive and cocky at times, and just, you know, he's a much more polarizing character than someone like Sangmin is, who never seems mean-spirited or, like, above his station, really. He's not denigrating other people, anything like that. That's why I can understand why, if you just don't like Dongmin all that much, or you don't enjoy watching him, then maybe this isn't the season for you. That this isn't going to be the best season of The Genius by default, then.
Oh, I totally agree with that, and I definitely get it. If Dongmin is not everyone's cup of tea, for sure. But I get the comparison that I found myself going back to is Bill Belichick, which is, I 1,000,000% get it. If you do not like this guy on a personal level, if you don't like his vibe, if you don't like his approach to the game or whatever, but it is going to be a complete non-starter for me when I hear people let that then influence how they view him as a player of these games, because I do not personally like Bill Belichick at all. At the same time, I cannot deny what Bill Belichick has done, not on the football field, but on the sidelines of a football field. And I feel the exact same way about Dongmin. Now, I like Dongmin a lot more than I like Bill Belichick, and I am someone who was able to see what draws people to him, or not even necessarily draws people to him because they are actively dying to please him, just because he is able to convince them that that is in their best interest. The same way I feel like Will Kirby, it would be another good example of this. Like, I totally get not liking Will Kirby, but it's pretty difficult to deny the effect that he is able to have on an obscene number of people. And when that starts bleeding into, I don't like Dongmin, and therefore I'm not willing to give him credit as an obviously all-time elite player of any reality TV game, that is a spot where I start seriously questioning any other opinion I've ever heard such a person give to me. Like, if you are that able to let your view of someone as a person in that kind of context dip into your hopefully objective analysis of how they perform in the circumstances they find themselves in, that's a way to lose a lot of points with me. All right, so there we go with Seed Poker. There goes Jung Moon. And we move on now, Dom, to Minus Auction 2, a game I guess we saw back in The Genius 2, where, as far as I'm concerned, this is going to be high on the list for me for favorite main match just kind of game designs. And if they were to return to any game that they'd done in a previous season, this certainly would have been one of my top picks. I love that the strategy is easy to understand. Like, the rules are super easy to understand. The strategy, though, is complex enough that I think, kind of crucially, aiming for a joint win anytime prior to, like, the absolute last turn is just so off the table. And that's, I think, pretty vital in a lot of Genius main matches, is people knowing only two of us are going to end this main match with safety, and everyone else is going to be vulnerable. There's a ton of politicking in this game. The visual element, I think, is a ton of fun, with so many overhead shots and everyone throwing their chips into the middle. There are massive, very quick swings in who is doing well. You know, one badly timed number can change everything. I am a huge, huge fan of Minus Auction 2. What do you think of Minus Auction in general?
I remember echoing those same sentiments, I think, at the time, and I would do it again now. I think it's a great game, great fun to watch. Easy to understand in the sense that you know what the stakes are. Like, it's very visually apparent what the players are playing for. Like, you look over at someone stand and they have the minus 24 and the minus 26, you know they're looking for the minus 25. Like, it's easy to put the pieces together, understand what they must be thinking. And it's not a game with, like, incredibly complex layers of strategy, but because of that, it does have this almost immediate appeal and replayability, where, like, I could happily watch Minus Auction on every season of The Genius, or really any show that features competitions like this. Like, do this as a veto competition, for example, in Big Brother. Like, I think this is just a great format for a game like this.
What was the game that I said? There was some game that we definitely said is one they should do every season. It has that kind of replayability. I'm spacing on what it is, but it might have been this one. This one would be...
Was it the confined scamming horse race?
I don't think it was scamming horse race, although whatever we can do to get HaHa back on our screens is certainly fine with me.
Well, absolutely. No disagreement on that one.
Yes.
This middle stretch of episodes as well, 7 through 9, human, and not to keep going back to that translation as like this holy text, but I think it does really illuminate a lot of stuff about the season. Human said that throughout this period is where he really felt at his lowest in the context of The Genius, where... The vibe was a little different. It wasn't as fun as it had been in season 3, where after each game they would go out for a meal and it was all very collegial and no hard feelings and so on, even after stuff like them getting frozen out in Constellation Game. Whereas season 4, there was a little bit more bad blood. And in part, I think that's because you do have all of these prior relationships and everything, and it's much more of like a cliquey mentality. But also that during this time, this is when he was taking his finals at KAIST, and so his entire life for this month, basically, was just he would film The Genius and he would come back and do exams. And there was a few days, I think, where he would film all day and then come back, stay up all night studying for an exam, and then take the exam. And that was just his existence for this time period. And so Hyunmin, not super chipper during this time, exhausted from all of this exam stress and just enjoying the game less than he had done in the past. You can see the signs of that when you're watching the episodes, if you're looking for it. And so him knowing that, like, his general Genius philosophy of I just need to not be last. I don't necessarily need to be first, although, hey, I'll take it. I love the ego boost that comes from solving the game and being the actual genius of the episode. And it turns out a lot of the time, Human does not even need to win the main match or do anything in the main match to get given a token of life. So in this middle stretch of episodes, Dongmin wins, gives him the token of life. Jinho wins, gives him the token of life. He is effectively, I mean, he is literally safe, even if he weren't virtually safe already, which I think he was, just kind of by showing up. But when he's not in this funk, when he returns to form in the next few episodes, he goes back to being like the MVP of that big alliance. And by the time we get to episode 10, there isn't really a big alliance to speak of anymore. We are down to the final five. But you see over the course of the season, Human goes from being like at the center of everything, even if his role is not given too much credit, to just kind of slinking into the background a little bit. And because he is not naturally a loud personality like Dongmin, when he's doing that, you don't notice him as much anymore.
Right. He is, you know, obviously a presence in Horror Race 2, but as Dongmin puts it when he's on his way to winning that one, it seems like Hyunmin wasn't really interested in the Dongmin side of things until things blatantly started going Dongmin's way. And while he was close to potentially giving him that token of life as well, he felt like at the end of the day it was ultimately just a little too face-up kind of opportunistic there. But it wouldn't have been crazy, I don't think, for Hyunmin to find himself gifted four or five tokens of life over the course of this season. I also think, at specifically Final Six here during Minus Auction 2, and I wonder if this played into K-Hound's decision to trash that minus 26 cube to essentially guarantee that Kyungran was going to be the loser. We see Dongmin say this to Hyunmin at one point, and I would be almost surprised if there wasn't kind of a consensus understanding of this, that based on the six of us who are left, if Kyungran doesn't have the token of life, she's going into the deathmatch. Any of us are going to pick her over any of the others if she's vulnerable.
It was also very funny to read how much of the season ended up coming down to Hyunmin relying on Kyunghoon as his chauffeur, where so Kyunghoon would drive him from Seoul to the filming location, which apparently was quite hard to get to by other means, although, like, I don't know what the Uber situation was back in South Korea in 2013, but we do see Hyunmin say in one episode, oh, Kyunghoon couldn't take me, so I had to get the subway. It's like, well, if you could get the subway the whole time, then why are you relying on, but regardless. But it turns out that actually played a big role, because Hyunmin, even when he was visibly frustrated with how Kyunghoon was behaving, it's like, well, this is the guy driving me home, so I can't make it too awkward, and I need him to drive me here next time, so I also can't make it too awkward. And so that plays into some of these gestures, like awarding tokens of life and so on, deathmatch opponents that you see over the course of the season. And also that apparently gave him a window into just how hard Kyunghoon was preparing for these deathmatches, where he was in his car and he saw a flipbook of 16 like image squares, the same way you would have for same picture hunt, and Kyunghoon was just like, whenever there was any free time at all, just like looking at those, memorizing them, flipping to the next page, memorizing those, just constantly training himself and testing himself to do that. And that is the kind of effort that I think you do have to put in. And in a way, we are robbed of seeing, like, same picture hunt between Kyunghoon and Hyunmin, which you imagine they would still be there now, going through that heat.
I mean, we saw, I don't remember if it was same picture hunt or same number hunt, but that death match between Jungmoon and K-Hound was literally, I think they both played perfectly, and it was just a matter of who had the most revealed first.
Yeah,
I agree. They would still be there if there were no get one wrong factor for a lot of the people in this cast for several of these games. But yeah, so I wanted to say quickly before we wrap up on Minus Auction 2 that I had forgotten about this angle to it, but Kyunghoon gives not only Sangmin his classic treatment early on when, like, in his desperate attempt to be loyal to Sangmin, he reveals that being loyal to Sangmin is his priority, and that kind of screws him in this Minus Auction. Kyunghoon has a chance in the final round to get a joint win. I know I've talked about this being a game where it's virtually impossible to get a joint win, and I say that fully recognizing that on the Genius 2, Sangmin and, oh god, Yu-Young? I'm going to go with Yu-Young, accidentally got a joint win. And this time around, Jun-Sok recognized immediately and tried to talk Kyunghoon into, hey, if you just take this right now, we're the joint winners. What are you doing? And we're both safe. And he passes on it. Like, he gives up a token of life for himself because he wants to stay loyal to Dongman, and he feels like that would be like bailing on his team or whatever, not being able to give Dongman the token of life too. And by being so obvious about this agenda, that is exactly what gets Dongman sent into the deathmatch.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's the not only the Dongman and Sangman treatment this season, it is exactly what happened to him in Fruit Stand, his very first game in the Genius, where, like, as Hyunmin put it, he tried to sell out the whole group to save Ah Young, but he betrayed everyone so hard that Ah Young ended up as the sole loser and in the death match herself. So lesson apparently not learned there for Kyung-hoon, and that is also going to be the end of Kyung-ran here for us, Dom. So I wanted to quickly get your parting thoughts on her.
Another one who kind of feels out of place in the Genius as a whole, where it's too much like chicanery for her. You know, she would much rather be in like a ordinary, straightforward professional setting where people are kind of straightforward and playing by the books, and it's all, you know, she's a valuable team member. That's her role, right? It's to be like this this contributor to a larger team. And instead she finds herself in the midst of this game that's all about deception, and there's a lot of like not explicit chest beating, but egos colliding with Dongmin and Sangmin and others, Kyung-hoon certainly. And it's all very, a little bit vulgar for her, I think. But fun to see her there. And, you know, you remember that scene where it said that, like, yeah, she was the person that people most wanted to see back out of anyone, basically. She had her own following, kind of independent of the Genius.
Yeah, I'm guessing I've said something along these lines before, but it's at least been a couple of years, so I'll say it again. Kim Kyung-ran, more like Kim Spradlin Kyung-ran. She is tremendously...
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, sorry.
I remember being frustrated by this on a weekly basis back in 2015, so it's nice to relive some of those old highlights.
I feel like Kyung-ran would be insanely effective in any kind of game where the social element was the overwhelming factor. And I do think that in many of the Genius main matches, that is the overwhelming factor. And she's tremendously successful in those kind of contexts. I don't know that she was honestly even drawing live to win this season. And I would say the exact same thing about Sangmin. I think the games that ended up coming up on this season were just way too hardcore math based for anyone who is not, you know, putting in crazy volume off the court to be competitive in there, but obviously would not have been a true all-star cast as far as I'm concerned without Kyung-ran back. I thought she was one of the most vital people that they were able to get to return for this, and loved seeing her able to make it this far. I feel like this was almost the realistic ceiling for Kyung-ran on this season.
Yeah, I couldn't put that any better myself.
All right. So let us move on now, Dom, to our final five. All over again, just blown away that this is the final five we are down to. I loved this combination of Dongmin, Hyunmin, Jinho, Junsok, and Kyung-hoon. Just like five complete mercenaries who will do anything to to get their way and come out ahead here. So unfortunately, we're going to be playing Horror Race 2 at Final 5, which is going to be probably the least interesting game of the whole season. But we are going to be joined, Dom, by the aforementioned Ah Young, the legend from Season 3, along with Doohee, Poong, Jongbum, and Sangmin, capping our former contestants who are returning for a guest role in this main match. A ton of fun seeing all of them back, of course, although I have pretty much nothing else to add about the Horror Race itself. I have, as I said, didn't even watch most of it this time around. It was just so confused by what I watched.
Yeah, moving swiftly on.
Yes, I guess...
Okay, I'll ask you one maybe constructive question then. Why do you think the Genius is so fond of these races where you go back to the Confined Scamming Horse Race?
There were two... So, yeah, they did two horse races in Season 1, and they did two races in Season 3, didn't they do the race in Season 3 twice as
well? The infamous middle race, beloved by all, comes back for a return appearance. So not only do they love having these races early in the game and then late in the game, they love repeating the same race as if, you know, I don't know if these races are popular with most of the audience and that's why they do it, or they think they're popular when they're really not. I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
I am not sure either. I thought maybe they were doing it to punish Dealer Nuna. It seems like an absolute nightmare every single time one of these games comes up, and they're just really trying to make her earn that paycheck.
Which I think she does. I think Dealer Nuna does a sterling job. Assisted maybe
it is inexcusable how long we have gone without shouting out Dealer Nuna. She's fantastic.
Yes, assisted ably by, I want to say it's Choi Byung-hoon.
Sure, yes, absolutely.
Always, and unidentified second male dealer, who both are, you know, good moral support.
They're excellent. And they are really like the Buckingham Palace guards. Like, we will see Dealer Nuna break a few times over the course of this season, but those two never really do.
Oh, they are completely unflappable. To be fair, they don't have Dongmin, like, aggressively... Yeah. Like, negging, hitting on them every episode, which I imagine is something you want to avoid in general, but, you know, so easier from that standpoint for sure. But they also, they do fade into the furniture very well.
Yeah, I guess to get through this final five episode, Junsok is ultimately going to be our casualty here. A surprising pick, I would say, compared to most of the people who ended up making this all-star cast, but what was your 5 years later take on having this guy who was the first ever person eliminated from the Genius back here in the grand final?
Yeah, he was the head scratcher, but I think they identified what you may call Wentworth upside in Lee Junsok, where he's the guy who goes out early, doesn't get too much of a chance to make a big impression, but they saw something in him in casting. They want to mine that for all it's worth, and they have faith that when put in the big leagues, they'll be able to deliver.
For sure. And I think, personally, he definitely did. He was someone who, this time around, really stood out for me more so than he did the first two or three times, I guess, that I watched this season. Maybe just because so much time has passed and I just didn't have strong memories of much pertaining to Junsok. But the same way, I don't remember who I said this about in The Genius 1 or 2 when we were rewatching those, but I remember for sure. It took me like 3 watches of The Genius 3 to really appreciate Dr. Yeonsung, and then he just totally became my guy. I don't know if Junsok is going to become totally my guy, but it really did stand out to me that he was someone who I got a lot more out of than I was expecting this time around.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so there he goes, and we move on now, Dom, to our final four, and we are going to be playing Cooperative Hold'em, and we are going to be cooperating with some guests. We, of course, have the legendary Cordyceps here to help out Kyung-hoon, a couple other really fun characters, and, of course, our guy, Hyun-min, making the correct decision and bringing in professional guest to defend his title after winning one of the guest games for Kyung-ran back in season 1. Hyun-min has brought in a legit ringer, and that cracks me up every time, and of course he wins again.
Yeah, I'll bring the cavalry in just to remove all doubt.
I was going to jokingly say that he should have brought in a former winner to be his guest, but like a genius winner, but I'm now realizing Sangmin would be the only person not still there, and I don't know if Sangmin would be your guy for Cooperative Hold'em.
As I think we joked at the time, he should have brought in Gael Nuna, Yoan's wife, who is as different from him as anyone could really be, because I think only she could really stand a chance of going toe-to-toe with Dongmin.
I feel like this would be a spot, and maybe, like, the main matches were fluid to the point that they would not have run this game if it were a different group of people left at this point. But I think if either, and they are not alone in this category, but if either of Kyung-ran or Sangmin is back there trying to do the scale puzzles or the matches or whatever against any of the other people here, I truly think they might just stop trying at a certain, like, they are hopeless at getting through this.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can tell, I feel like this is the spot in the season at which it math just takes over on everything, and if you are not insanely proficient in that regard, you're gonna have a really rough time making it through.
It almost reminds me of like the, and I'm realizing again this comparison will mean nothing to you, but like the BB Can Endgame, especially BB Can 5, where it's like, We are not playing the same game anymore, effectively. Like, this is now a mathematical contest rather than a social one in a way that it really hasn't been up until this point. And when it comes to those final items that give you a big leg up if you do reach the finale, obviously that goes back to the social bonds that you've made throughout the season. But if you're just looking at the competitions themselves, this is where I think someone like a Sangmin really would start to flounder.
He'd be absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we end up seeing Hyunmin pull it out here. It all comes down to just the last question. The way this works, this is our final Garnet. This is our final Garnet match of the season, and everyone realizes the whole name of the game is just don't bust out first, because that person is going to be the deathmatch candidate, and unfortunately it's Jinho who is going to be taking that role. But everyone knows that we're going to be playing exactly 20 hands, and unless someone has such a commanding lead that they have like a mega stack where they have more than everyone else combined by that point, we're all just going to be going all in on hand number 20. Given that winning is the only thing that matters, there's only one token of life up for grabs, you would be insane not to just ship it all in blind on the final hand. It is a bit anticlimactic on a rewatch, just knowing that it's all going to come down to that one. It's certainly not a coin flip, because the mini games are going to determine who gets to put out like the winning cards, but as far as a main match goes, probably one of the least continuous from start to finish in terms of how relevant things are going to be. The same way, frankly, we may end up seeing at the final three as well when we're playing How Much, where so much comes down to the final round. How Much comes down to the final round. I did have some questions about the kind of game design in these last couple main matches.
Yeah, and I think that it's easy to lose that in the shuffle here, where for as much as the casting is fantastic and so much of the aesthetic is great and the editing is great and so on, the actual game design itself sometimes does leave a lot to be desired.
Oh yeah, I definitely think there may have been even more spots that were able to be kind of covered up by editing along the way, but I'm totally willing to look past that sort of thing. Just like, when you are running games this complicated, being played by people this smart, there are just going to be spots where there's nothing you can really do about it. So I'm willing to give it a pass in terms of their decision making in the moment, but I do think that may have a potentially even sizable role in why this end game is a bit less exciting.
Yeah, and I do wonder if that may have contributed to us not getting a season 5, is maybe the tank was just kind of empty in that department.
Maybe. I think the executive producer, the top guy, said, I don't want to do any more of this. I want to go do the society game. And the other people on the production team just said, we're not going to do it without him.
Mm-hmm. So, which, honestly, like, it's a good sign in some ways when you have that level of loyalty to someone high up in your organization, and it's justified.
I mean, I think it speaks to just that person being so vital to the creative vision of the show that they didn't think they could even do a serviceable job without them. So final note for me just on Cooperative Hold'em. I cracked up when Jinho sat down and they're being instructed to put in their antes, and he's immediately like trying to straddle and like raise the stakes. And then there was one hand where it was all four of them saw both of the community cards, and Jinho led full pot on what is this, I guess the river in this situation. On the, all the cards are out, there's no more luck to be had here. He leads full pot into three people who have totally uncapped ranges, and it turns out he was turning bottom pair into a bluff. Like, I cracked up when I saw that out of Jinho, and I literally thought to myself, like, if he just did that at like an actual poker table with me, and I know Jinho plays poker at like a very high level now these days, this dude would take my money forever. And I swear, so one of these days I'm going to go in and just like punt it on the first hand to set up that exact dynamic. The problem is I play with the same people all the time, so I don't know how much they're going to buy it that I'm suddenly just insane. But that is so effective against certain. I swear to you, I would never ever fold like second pair to Jinho if I saw him do that sort of thing.
It's so hard to tell because of Jinho's affect whether he'd just kind of given up at this point and was just being the maniac he'd always wanted to be, or if this was him just being business as usual, completely clinical, doing what he thought would give him the most equity in that decision point or whatever. Like, it really could go either way for me.
I truly don't want to get too bogged down in the weeds here on the poker element of it all, but the way the board ran out, it was certainly a situation where most people would be very nervous if they didn't have the literal nuts. The board was 2-3, so a 4 would make the nuts straight, and anyone who was not holding a 4 would almost surely fold to his pot size bet. The problem is no one on the other side of that would ever pick that run out unless they had a favorable holding for that situation.
I think the image of Jinho also plays a big part here, where if you ask his castmates, how good is Jinho at Indian poker, or similar games, any kind of betting game, the Jinho that exists in their mind is far better than the real Jinho, I think, who is still very good, don't get me wrong, and as you said, has real life poker experience at a high level. But the Jinho that exists in their head is like this this savant, like this card playing monster. And so I think he gets away with a lot that he wouldn't if he were just a stranger coming into the season.
I mean, if in theory you want to have bluffs there, and given that top pair has a ton of showdown value, bottom pair seems like the most compelling bluff option to me. So maybe Jinho's just a genius.
Yeah, maybe Jinho is just levels above all of us.
I think the issue is, I don't think when you're out of position against three players, you want to have bluffs there in a limped pot, especially for full pot size bets. But neither here nor there, Dom. This is unfortunately going to be the week where we do lose Jinho here at Final Four. A third, if we're willing to call the halfway point of the Genius 2 a deep run, I'm willing to say a third kind of deep run for Jinho here. What are your just parting thoughts on Jinho until 5 years from now when we're back in here talking about him again?
I've never been as much of a Jinho fangirl as some people, or fanboy in my case, I suppose. But I like Jinho. I think his demeanor, like, it's much more relatable to me than like the Dongmins and Simons of the world. And it's fun seeing the contrast with them, and them trying to needle him and make fun of him, and him just like approaching the games with this reliable, quiet competence where they're just like losing their minds constantly and being loud and being bossy. So I like it. I think Jinho, maybe it's not the most interesting character by himself, but as part of this cast, that adds a decent amount.
I think I am a bit of a Jinho fanboy, a Jinho-holic potentially, where the first time around when we were watching this all these years ago, I was certainly a big-time Jinho fan. And was very happy to see him win, happy to see him back for season 2, and happy to see him go far on season 4. But I think just the last few years of Survivor have made me appreciate the intricacies of the Jinho character more than I did the first time around. Like, I see so much more value, I think, these days in having a person who is striking such a balance between absolute genius and what the hell is this guy doing? He can't even speak correctly. He's got totally the wrong idea on this main match. I love that it could go so hard in either direction for Jinho in any given week, and that no matter how it goes, he doesn't lose his cool for the most part. He is able to, he'll certainly jokingly like get all flustered and like Homer strangling Bart Simpson, like that sort of thing, like as a bit, but you can always tell every single thing with Jinho is 100% in the spirit of the game. He's there to do his best. It may go well, it may go poorly. He just wants to give it as much as he has. And I really, really found myself appreciating Jinho perhaps more than I ever did the first time around this time.
Yeah, I think still somewhat overrated as a player, and we had that debate in a lot of detail with Kaz, I think, when we did the season four draft, and then also after the season, just looking back, because he makes a deep run, but if you ask what was his defining moment of the season, it's actually really hard to come up with one.
Jinho's defining season of the Genius Four?
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, his...
See?
Yeah, I'm rolling through the main matches. There were definitely times where he had tokens of life. Like, he won minus auction, but it was because Kyung-hoon essentially just declined the joint win there, and his strategy in that game was to take the low 30s numbers and just rack up a ton of coins with that, as those were all like going around and around and around, and it seemed like because of that he was not as involved in the kind of politics. Like, he was a main match winner that was almost staggeringly inconspicuous compared to the average main match winner of the Genius that time around. And I don't know, now that I've meandered around a bit to try to pick out Jinho's season four highlight, I guess we would have to go back to Jinho opening the door in season one or season four, episode 1:04 or whatever, is not just a Jinho highlight for me, but just a franchise highlight for me.
Absolutely.
And just Jinho's presence is a highlight by itself, Dom.
Only he could really do that in that moment, too. It had to be Jinho. And in that respect, it's not really the fact that it's anything about Jinho. It's that it's Jinho. It's the first winner, you know, one of still the most iconic players in the entire franchise. It had to be him to make that moment what it was. And so always will be grateful to him for that, at least.
Okay. So let's move it along to final three here. We are going to be playing How Much, yet again, with Korean Saturday Night Live members. And once again, another game that we do not need to spend a ton of time on the intricacies of here. But I did want to get your take on the final round, where everyone knows the whole time, as long as we're all within 3 points of each other going into round 10, that's worth 4 points. So whoever wins that is going to be the winner. And the real name of the game is just being in the range to have a shot at that yourself in round 10. And we see Kyung-hoon more or less soul read one of the panelists and deduce that, all right, this guy is heavily influenced by round number bias, and I'm going to save exactly 100,000 for round 10 and know pretty reliably that that's going to be spot on based on all of his other guesses. And we wind up here, Dom, in a situation where everyone is theoretically drawing live at this last round, but the other two also know Kyung-hoon is going to put 100,000 and that is going to be correct. But the way this game works, if two people tie their numbers because they both put the correct number, the third person who put the highest unique number will win by default. So it becomes not only an issue of figuring out what the panelists put down for their numbers, but also trying to figure out what the others are going to guess. And do they know that that's what the panelists put down? And do I want to go exact, or do I want to hope that the other two both match each other and I go slightly lower? We wind up in a situation where Dongmin in particular knows Kyung-hoon put 100,000, and if I put 100,000 too, that means Hyun-min is going to get the 4 points and he is going to win. If I put anything other than 100,000, Kyung-hoon is going to get the 4 points and he's going to win. I cannot win myself. What I can do is decide who I play in the death match against. And we talked about this earlier. This is where 12 Jangi is the game everyone's been studying all week, and maybe there's some ego on the line, especially after Hyunmin beat Dongmin in 12 Jangi in their Genius 3 finals. We ultimately see him decide to choose Hyunmin, who I would imagine he views as a stronger overall opponent. What do you think, Dom, about just that decision where either way you have to play against whoever you view as the stronger opponent, either right now in a best of one in this death match, or if you win that, you get to play them best two out of three in the finals, how would you be approaching that situation as Dongmin?
Well, I think it's in some ways the wrong question to ask, because that's framing it as a strategic question, which, and maybe this is me completely missing the mark, I don't think it really is that for him. I think this is more about just, who do I want to play against at this game in this moment to set up this final against this person?
Okay.
I don't think it's so much, well, I have to go either one round against this guy or three rounds against this guy in the best of three, and therefore, how does that all shake out? I'm sure it's part of it. I don't think it's the whole story, though, or anything close.
I totally agree that there are many, many other factors, but I just did have kind of an interesting, what I thought was kind of an interesting thought about it, that yes, you are voluntarily going into a death match against someone you know is an absolute behemoth at whatever the show throws at him. He's been practicing all week, and you've lost to him at this exact game at a very critical moment before, and if that happens again, you're going to be out. But I did think, just kind of like as a logical exercise, if you do view Hyunmin as the opponent against whom you would be more worried in general in a given death match, and I guess you do know that right now you're going to play 12 Jangi, but you don't know what's coming in the finals if you can make it there, I do think there is just theoretical merit to, okay, I have to go against the stronger opponent either today or tomorrow. I would rather it be best of one, where the variance is going to be much higher, than best of three, where their edge is potentially going to have more time to realize its equity.
Yeah, I think that's a good argument. And if Dongmin were approaching this in a like robotic, single-minded fashion, that's what I think he should do. But as I said, this is more about the culmination of the collective stories of all of these players. And I think going into this final three, all three of them thought they would beat either of the other two at anything. You know, I think all of them had a lot of confidence in themselves.
I definitely don't dispute that. I do think it's very funny, though, that you said Dongmin did challenge and got the challenge accepted and just smashed Kyunghoon at 12 Jangi after that. What the hell was he doing all week?
Who?
Was Kyunghoon not studying? I would have thought Kyunghoon would be super competitive.
No, Kyunghoon had been studying from the beginning of the season in 12 Jangi, but Dongmin was better at it, I suppose. He studied harder.
Oh, he's just more talent. Jangi god. All right. So we are going to be losing Hyunmin here at third place. I think it may have been I may be misremembering this. When we did our Genius 4 auction draft before the season began airing, is it true that Hyunmin was the most expensive player there?
That sounds right, yeah. I'm not even sure who ended up with him in the end.
I think you had Hyunmin. I know I had Dongmin. I certainly had enormous expectations for Hyunmin this season, whether I was the high bidder on him in any of those auction drafts or whatever. I would continue to stand by Hyunmin as one of the most talented and impressive players in general that I have ever seen on reality TV. And obviously a lot of that is just based on his raw ability in so many of the games. But I also think another thing that kind of goes potentially underreported in the Western coverage of the Genius is just what a disadvantage it probably would have been for pretty much anyone else to be so much younger than the rest of the cast in Korea. Like, age is a huge, huge deal there, and anyone older than him, like, deferring to him and saying, you just tell me what to do, is a much different thing than it is here. And pretty much across the board, it took very little time for everyone to quickly say, forget whatever societal standards we're used to. Hyunmin is the person I need to talk to, because Hyunmin just fucking gets it.
Yeah, and I think that is such a big factor that isn't immediately obvious. But yeah, I think it's so much harder to perform well in this game when you are... I don't know who the next youngest person was. I guess Jungmoon.
Yeah.
Who, again, never seemed to be taken seriously by anybody. So that, I think, even just accentuates the point. It's so hard in a game which is defined by older celebrities as a young stranger to actually make your mark in that way.
Yeah, for sure. So There goes Hyunmin, still to this day one of my all-time favorite reality TV contestants. Dom, we are down to Dongmin against K-Hound here in our finals. Unfortunately, probably the least exciting, I would say, of the four finals episodes that we've gotten to see. Although Dongmin, once he has won the first death match and ostensibly won the second death match and thus the championship, is in a situation where we still have a couple of questions to go. I have a score that even if he gets all of them right, he cannot overtake it. I have, in essence, won this death match and won my second championship as long as I just don't buzz in. If I just sit on my hands, it is 100% in the bag, and he buzzes in and gets it wrong. How on earth?
We were baffled by this at the time, and it remains baffling 5 years on. I don't know if it's hubris or some, like, compassion, pity. Like, some weird blend of all of those. It still doesn't make sense to me. And it's not that it doesn't make sense to me in the sense that I wouldn't do it. It's that it doesn't make sense for Dongmin to be the one doing it either. I mean, it does if it is just pure hubris, I think. But outside of that, like, you want to give him more credit, and his performance in basically every other aspect in the season shows he deserves as much credit as you're willing to give him. But this is just wild. Like, if he goes on to lose after this, it may not be the most costly blunder in terms of actual dollars or won loss, but it is, for me, the stupidest blunder in the history of a game like this.
Oh, I mean, not only the history of a game like this, I think you could make an argument that that is, again, not in terms of just dollar equity, because he's still certainly plenty live even after he gets this wrong. He's not giving away the game. But I think in terms of just sheer what the fuck were you thinking in the moment kind of situations, I think that could easily be compared to Colby and Wu on Survivor, just obviously taking the wrong person when they could, as they know for sure in the moment, win 100% of the time if they just make the other choice.
He would be in his own tier at that point. And to be fair, having already won before, it's like, okay, well, I can cry myself to sleep on my medium-sized pile of money. But even so, it's, lock in that second W. Get that unique title that no one else can really lay claim to.
Yes. Well, it is ultimately going to go his way again. But Dom, before we get into our closing thoughts on Dongmin running it back and becoming a two-time winner of the Genius, what did you make 5 years later of Kyunghoon and this kind of unbelievable turnaround that he had? Like, I don't remember how much Hyunmin went for in that auction. I'm pretty sure he was the highest cost player, right around like $15-$20 or so. I definitely remember Kyunghoon went for the minimum bet of 50 cents. Everyone in the world said the one person who has no chance is Kyunghoon, and he ends up making this miracle run all the way to the finals.
Kyunghoon is the preseason Rodney or Tony. Like, he's the guy who we leave Natalie Anderson. He's the guy we leave remaining on the board, because how on earth could this person conceivably win a game like this? And yet he came astonishingly close. And yeah, it's really hard to find the right words to talk about Kyunghoon, and that's what makes him Kyunghoon, right? Like, that is the essence of his character. And when you have Dongmin, Sangmin, Jinho, Kyungran, these really iconic figures for the Genius, Kyunghoon as the ultimate spoiler, as the person who no one takes seriously, but by the end, you have to take him seriously because he is a big presence in every single game through to the end of the season. You can't ignore him even if you want to. And at various points, you can tell, like, Kyungran really would like to be able to ignore Kyunghoon, or Hyunmin would love to just have a Kyunghoon-free day. You're not going to get it, I'm afraid, because Kyunghoon is going all the way to the finals, where he comes, like, he gets demolished in the finals itself, but just being in the finals at all is a truly impressive accomplishment.
For sure. And I certainly enjoyed watching this absolutely astonishing kind of turnaround. Like, I was certainly one of the people saying this guy's got essentially no chance. I believe I did pick him up for 50 cents just because I generally am the guy kind of taking the bargain bin players in our auctions, if history is any indication. But I was absolutely gobsmacked by this dude making it even half as far as he did. I would return to, I think perhaps the best thing he could have asked for was Sangmin being eliminated. I do wonder if, as long as Sangmin was in there with him, he was just going to prioritize impressing Sangmin or saving Sangmin or doing whatever Sangmin wanted. It seemed like that was his number one priority. And, you know, I'm sure if I found myself on a reality TV show with Sangmin, that would be the number one. I would want to be in an alliance with Sangmin, too, even recognizing the 95% chance that he was just going to burn me at the end of the game. But it seemed like once Sangmin was gone, he was able to really focus and was conclusively one of the better players in a lot of these main matches along the way. Certainly plenty of questionable decisions and comments sprinkled in there, but on the whole, absolutely blown away. Still have a hard time believing that this is the same guy who showed up to the Genius 3 episode 1 and decided that his best bet was to just completely fuck 12 different people. But yeah, an incredible reality TV storyline for me, although I will say, and I don't even know how, it's rare for me to feel this way. I feel like I remember not being as forthcoming as I try to be in general on the podcast back in the day about the extent to which I was rooting for Dongmin in the finals. I certainly would have been happy if Kyunghoon won, but in a season like this, the grand final with the all-time greatest cast in the history of reality TV, it just seemed as ludicrous as it would be to have that kind of wild card turn things around and complete the story and go on to be the champion of champions. It was just unambiguous to me that the best player leading into this finals in the history of the Genius was Dongmin, and the deserving winner and the right winner of this season, as far as I was concerned, is Dongmin.
Going into that final three, were you rooting for Dongmin over and above Hyunmin too?
I think I was rooting for Hyunmin the most.
Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah, but I think there may have been some fan service in my commentary on how happy I would have been for Kyunghoon to beat Dongmin back in the day. I would have been, I don't want to say disappointed, but I would have felt like it was overtly less than the best ending.
He is your Keith Nail, it turns out.
I would definitely not say that. I think Kyunghoon's presence on the season was fully, fully justified, and I'm very happy that they brought him back here, which I do not know if I can say the same about Keith Nail, but yeah. I certainly was a big time Kyunghoon fan, and it was a huge treat getting to watch him go from this complete agent of chaos to a legit baller in some of these games. But as far as I was concerned, Dongmin winning was the correct outcome for this season. And Dom, with that in mind, we are going to have Dongmin go on now to be a 2-time winner of the Genius. Is Dongmin the greatest reality TV contestant as far as you are concerned?
I would say, in terms of being a player of his game,
correct, yeah,
I would say yes, with a caveat that so much of this is like culturally contextual. So if you took Dongmin and placed him in a lot of like Big Brother Survivor seasons, his brand of leadership, if you want to call it that, I don't think it would go down so well. But that's kind of a silly rejoinder, because, okay, yeah, he's not American. He is South Korean, and he is playing the game that he was cast for. And in the confines of that game, he absolutely crushed it twice. So what are we taking away from him at that point? Like, the answer is we take away the monorail performance, which is the Achilles heel that's kind of showing itself. And if Dongmin's showing any skin, it is that deathmatch performance. But outside of that, you know, everyone needs a floor call, and even Dongmin, and maybe that's his.
Yes, and just to clarify, I think most people, when they think of the monorail performance, will be thinking, what are you talking about? I mean, that was the most legendary bluff of all time. He got Yeonju to put another piece down when it was obviously impossible. It was obviously impossible because Dongman could not have conceivably punted the first two turns harder. He made, like, the absolute worst moves to put himself in that position, and I definitely agree that that is a pretty fair criticism for sure. But and I also agree that if we were to throw Dongman onto U.S. Survivor, he would have very little chance at meshing with enough of the types of people that they cast on those shows. However, Dom, and spoiler alert incoming here, the producer of The Genius, the guy that they refused to do the show without, went on to make a show called The Society Game. And for The Society Game 2, shockingly to me, one of the people that they brought on to live in this, certainly not as harsh as Survivor, but Survivor-esque kind of conditions where no one really has much and it's a massively social and physical situation. Dongman was brought in as one of the 24 contestants on that. Any guesses how that went?
Well, I was planning to watch season 2 at some point, and I know I said that years ago. I will find a spare afternoon to plow through that. Yes, I will. Don't actually spoil it for me here.
Okay, you were not going to watch it if you have made it 6 months into quarantine and still not watched it.
Okay, how about this? I will take my headphones out. You can say your piece. You can whatever you want to say in the freedom that I'm not going to hear it. So if you want to go off the chain, you can do it.
All right.
Make your point about Dongman on the Society Game and then let me know somehow when you want me back and we'll
forget
we'll
finish it. This out. Okay. This is too weird to now get into.
Headphones off, mask off, say your thing.
Okay, well, apparently it's not too weird to get into. Obviously, Dongman went on to win the Society Game as well. And now I don't know when Dom is coming back, but Dom, I'm yelling at him so he can hopefully hear me through his headphones that are out. It's over.
I'm back.
Okay,
I'm back.
Good.
Okay, good.
Okay, my piece has been said, and I'm sure every audience member is extremely happy that we spent as long as we did on all of that. But yeah, for my money, Dongman, I just have an impossible time putting certainly any genius player above Dongman. And if I'm talking Survivor, Big Brother, anything, there may be other people that are worthy of being in this virtually kind of flawless territory, being placed in this kind of virtually flawless territory purely within the context of them as a player within their respective games. I do not see how I will frankly ever be able to talk myself into putting anyone above Dongman.
Okay. It's high praise, but I think it's somewhat justified.
Think about what it would take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're willing to be very loose with the definition, if there's like someone on the challenge or one show like that where someone there's such like a long body of work that you can make that argument for someone, but I don't know.
It's not going to be anyone on the challenge, I promise you that.
Johnny Bananas versus Dongman, who you got?
Well, so this is the thing is, all right, we do not need to spend time on this. We need to get out of here. But I do, on a separate side note, think that what Johnny Bananas has done for himself on the challenge in terms of just establishing it as a legit career where he is the guy who is just getting asked back every single time for as long as he wants genuinely puts him in the discussion as well for greatest reality TV personality to just have an ongoing free roll every single year at a million or so dollars, I think definitely warrants a place in that conversation as well. But in terms of his efficiency at succeeding in the game, I don't think he's on the same level as Dongman.
Yeah, give Dongman 20 reps and see how the scoreboard looks at the end of that.
Yes. All right. So, Dom, final question from me, since we're in the hyperbole zone here, how does this Genius 4 rewatch affect your opinion, if at all, in terms of where this season stacks up for you and just your favorite reality seasons of all time?
So I was hoping at the time, like I said, I think that I would put it at the top with back in 2015, stuff like Survivor Cagayan, which was a lot more fresh back then, and maybe fresh once again in the near future for us, who knows? Stuff like that as the next tier down. Obviously with the hope that something that I didn't even know what it could be, but something could come along to surpass it in the next 5 years. And if you had told me that in 2020, there was going to be an all-winner season of Survivor that Tony would go on to win again. I think that I would have said, all right, well, maybe we have a new challenger, a new contender has entered the ring. It turns out that was not everything that I wanted it to be. And so that's not even, I mean, I would say not in the discussion for best Survivor season for me in terms of how much I enjoyed watching it in real time. And this, I mean, absolutely was. So I think the throne remains here. I think the crown remains with the genius.
Yeah. To kind of compare it to Survivor Winners at War, it felt to me like in Survivor, by a certain point, I found myself saying, on paper, I'm really blown away by this cast and what's going on, but in practice, it's not actually having a huge effect on me. Whereas I would feel about The Genius 4, like, the specifics of what's happening in these main matches, especially near the end, is not necessarily as thrilling as I even expected, but this cast is just so good that that's outweighing all of the potentially less exciting strategic things than we got in previous seasons. So for me, I would say The Genius 4 is, to this day, the greatest of all time reality TV season for me, although I would say, furthermore, that it is probably closer to The Genius 3, which would be my number 2. Sorry, a lot of confusing numbers being thrown earlier.
Real, it's who's on day. Yeah.
Real who's on first situation going on. I need some of these visual, the graphics team from The Genius to come lay out for the audience what I'm trying to say here. The margin between The Genius 3 and The Genius 4 for the top of my all-time list, I think, has come down a bit. I realize how weird this sounds, but like, it's still the greatest of all time for me, which is absolutely insane territory considering how much reality TV I have watched. But I think my opinion has actually come down on this rewatch, which is weird.
But still very much like in greatest of all time contention for sure. Like,
I mean, still literally number one, just not by as wide of a margin.
It may be that if you gave the raw footage of Survivor Winners at War to The Genius editors and you gave the raw footage of The Genius 4 to the Survivor editors, maybe that would cause a shift in the power rankings.
That is 1,000,000% would cause a shift in the power rankings.
And I don't know if that's because of how bad the Survivor editing is or how good the Genius editing is. A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
I think it is firmly the latter. Sorry. I think the Survivor editors still do a reasonably good job with the insane parameters that are put upon them by Jeff Probst and Matt Van Wagenen, that the winner needs to be a fucking hero 24/7 every time. But, you know, with Tony being potentially an exception there. But I think it is, at least in my mind, all credit to the unbelievable skill of the Genius editing team. I think this is one of the most finely edited the TV story products that I have seen in terms of their ability to make compelling episodes. Like, compared to scripted dramas, I think they do a good job bringing the heat with so much tension.
Yeah, and we've had that discussion before. May, I don't know, for the 10-year anniversary, maybe we'll have it again, but I think that has kind of run its course.
Yeah, I mean, this rewatch and some of Dongman's performances to me made me genuinely wonder if some of this was, like, scripted. Like, I got Mike Possel vibes from Dongman at certain points where, like, we're getting close to the level of, like, it's almost more likely that this is scripted or that he's being fed insider information.
Right. It's some, like, hidden earpiece, you know, in those flowing locks somewhere.
And that to me is, like, the highest compliment I can pay any reality show or team of editors or any player on a reality show is, it's almost more likely that you're cheating and this isn't organic. That is the highest compliment I can give.
Yes.
Yes. All right, Dom, there you have it. The Genius 4. What a treat. Anything else you wanted to get out there?
It has been so fun giving myself an excuse to rewatch a season. Not that I needed one. Not that anyone should ever need one. Go rewatch it right now if you're so inclined. I think you won't regret it one bit. It's nice having something to work towards with that, and it's great to be coming in here. And talking about it has really fired up a lot of that nostalgia for me. in some cases, even above rewatching the episodes, where like, I've rewatched many things kind of into the ground where like, I could, you know, there are episodes of some TV shows where I could just like recite most of the script along as it's playing or whatever. But there's nothing that can really bring back the experience of watching it for the first time, the giddiness that we all felt around it, like, you know, having these discussions with you that I was having 5 years ago and having them now again. So that's been real fun.
Who's the Jed Bartlett of the genius?
Jed Bartlett. What kind of metric are we agreeing
on? I don't know. I just needed to make everyone... When you said that, I assume you were talking about the West Wing, that you could just recite every single...
I mean, I'm not going to put that to the test in any formal way, but I think people will see where I'm coming from.
All right, Dom, let's walk and talk our way the fuck out of here. This has been a very long podcast at this point, but totally with totally with everything you just said. What a great time getting to watch all of this, and hopefully you guys enjoyed listening along as well. Dom is, of course, on Twitter at DomHRV. I can be found at Colin Stone. For anyone who is somehow just a genius fan that doesn't really know what else we do, normally we're talking about Survivor, although that seems to be kind of up in the air right now. But if you're a Survivor fan too, you can certainly find the better part of a decade worth of archives for the older seasons here. And we do bonus episodes covering classic reality seasons over at patreon.com/DomandColin. Just about to wrap up the final week of BB8 and then on to something new after that. Still TBD, but excited for that as well. So I think that is going to wrap us up. Thank you once again.
Just quickly, I do enjoy the thought of someone who has only ever listened to our genius coverage, nothing else at all, and so now they're checking in, revisiting after 5 years, and there's a whole back catalog there if you want to dive into.
I plugged this earlier, but if you are just a random genius fan,
good to have you.
I think we have every single episode linked in that master list. So just Google Dom and Colin, the genius master list, and you will find all of the content that we have done before this. But I think that is finally going to wrap us up here. So guys, truly in love with anyone who has made it this far into a genius podcast 5 years after the franchise has wrapped up. So you guys are the true heroes here. We will be back sometime soon with some other sort of reality TV content here on the main feed, although a bit up in the air at this point to figure out what that is going to be now that the Big Brother season may be a little less compelling than normal or less compelling than we had thought it might be at this point on this specific season only to be talking about. But I'm sure we will find something. So until then, take care, everybody. Fighting.